Today's episode of Puck Soup is sponsored by Tremors, A Cold Day in Hell. Get ready for a wild and lethal adventure in the next chapter of the beloved cult classic Tremors franchise, Tremors, A Cold Day in Hell, starring Michael Gross, who kicked all the ass in Tremors, and Jamie Kennedy, who told you all the rules about horror movies and Scream. Available now on Blu-ray combo pack, DVD, and digital from Universal 1440 Entertainment, Tremors, A Cold Day in Hell. I love me some Tremors. So should you. Enjoy the show.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an FM commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.
Hey, everybody. It's your pal Dave. Dave Lozo. Mostly of Vice Sports, and you're going to hear some rumors about me today, and they're going to come from Greg Wyshynski, and he's going to say that he heard me on the way into the studio today say, fuck this podcast. It's just not true. My PR guy heard me, and I said a swear word, but it wasn't fuck this podcast, and that's it. That's all I have to say about that.
Yins know I'm Greg Wyshynski of ESPN. Yins know that. Yins know I'm eating a sandwich as big as my head right now. I just got in from Pittsburgh this morning. All right, this afternoon to just pop in and see, you know, loved ones. And by that, I mean Dave.
Yeah. The wife and dog are inconsequential.
Yeah,
this trip
of course.
Home. Absolutely.
I made it in okay. Made it out of the game last night. Before we get into last night's Caps-Pens game and the series writ large, I want to mention the fact that I did my hit for ESPN Plus's In the Crease last night inside the arena, as I've been doing after every game. It's a fun show. I really like it, actually.
Mm-hmm. Is it ESPN Plus in French Canada?
Of course it is.
I want to make sure you want to hit all the audiences.
And In the Crease, I believe, also. It's Linda Cohen. It's usually Barry Melrose. It's a really good highlight show. I dig it a lot. They do some cool stuff. So I've been doing hits from the arena, like kind of talking about what's happening in the locker room. Well, Linda, the Penguins were jubilant after that kind of thing.
They were listening to a band called Morrissey after the game and jamming out to the tunes of Morrissey.
No, if it's Pittsburgh's locker room, and based on my experiences inside PPG Paints Arena, it's definitely Metallica and or any other hard rock or metal band from the 1980s to 1992.
See, I think if it's like Winnipeg, it's probably like all shit from the 90s. It's like they listen to Lifehouse after the game. You know? I'm hanging by a moment. Yeah, man, I love the new stuff.
It's inconsequential Canadian rock bands.
Yeah. You know? Coming up next, Nickelback, followed by Lifehouse, followed by Nickelback. Did you know that rule in Canada where, like, on Canadian radio, they have to play a certain number of Canadian bands?
I do.
I remember being in Calgary for the first time, and I couldn't get over how much Nickelback and Lifehouse was on the radio. Mm-hmm. So someone was like, oh, they have to.
That was a situation, I think, for, like, their NHL, like, network, is that they had to have a certain amount of, like, Canadian talent on the NHL network.
Oh, because they filmed Toronto?
Because it's, like, Sirius Canada or whatever. Like, it was something like that. So I did my hit inside the arena, and it turned out that there was a technical difficulty. And I found this out as soon as I walked through the doors to go to the outside of the arena at, like, 12:30 at night. So they're like, can you go back in and do it? I'm like, it's literally locked. Like, the whole building is now locked. They're like, okay, is there another place you could do it? I'm like, yeah, I could do it at the Rich Pilon statue. So I did my video hit.
You were going to go to Shales.
At the Rich Pilon statue. But the best part about it is I finally get the whole thing situated. We test the audio. It sounds great. I'm ready to go. And I'm like, thanks, Linda. The Penguins were jubilant after game 4 while the Capitals were frustrated. And all of a sudden I hear,
is that Brent Burns? Like, who was that?
And I look to my right. And there's this little old man on what can only be termed a garbage Zamboni coming up the sidewalk. Huh. to sweep up around the Mario statue and pick up half-drank Coors Light bottles and all sorts of this shit.
Huh.
And so I had to stop. And I'm like, the camera's just now pointed at the statue, and the people that are watching it from Bristol are just looking at this picture. And it must have been like that scene in Austin Powers with the slow-speed Zamboni chase. Because I'm just by the side. I'm like, all right, I'm going to wait until this guy passes. And in the frame, you just see the Zamboni go,
See, here's the thing about this story. I mean, were there any witnesses? Because I don't really believe it happened because, you know, I don't know.
You sound like you're really itching to talk about something I just don't want to talk about. But go ahead and hit me with it. Hit me, one more time.
Look, it's been a while since we've sat down in this room where I haven't been the one in trouble with the league or with, like, say, a boss who is the ESPN ombudsman who said shitty stuff about Jermel Hill. And then I called him the dumbest
thing. That was the problem.
Like, that's usually me. And now here's you, the guy who heard a player say a thing outside the locker room. By the way, good job getting downstairs early. You weren't up in the press box.
Well, that's why I was there.
That's
for
why
it.
You were there to hear it.
Myself, Rob Rossi, several cameramen, and a reporter from a DC station, were all there by the Caps locker room. They come off the ice. Nick Backstrom throws his stick. It makes a very, very loud noise, and then we hear someone say, "Fuck this league."
Someone.
So what happened was I was on the wall facing the wall. Many of the other reporters were on the wall facing the hallway where they saw Nick Backstrom throw his stick and say, "Fuck this league."
I like how Sergey, the PR guy from the Caps, was like, "I got to get out in front of this." As if like Nick Backstrom screamed out, like, you know, "The Holocaust never happened." Like, no, he said, "Fuck this league."
I think who, you know, cares? In defense of Sergey, well, one, he's only doing his job, and like, two,
well, is he doing his job if he's lying?
Of course, that's why you're in communications.
You're public relations. You relate to the public. You don't
he uses
lie
facts
to
make his smoky eye.
So no, I mean, like, his gig is to try to protect his player, right? So. You know, and when you criticize the league, chances are you're going to get a phone call from the league. So I completely understand why he's doing it. And of course, it was a situation where, you know, Nicky doesn't believe that anyone's going to hear him. I mean, there's no fucking reporters are right there, even though, you know, basically what happened was, the irony of it is that we were in an area where none of this would have been even heard. And then they let us into the area closer to the locker room about 10 seconds before this happened. So anyways, basically, long story short, it was a weird hour for your boy, where the Caps gave some vicious pushback. They you know, they were calling it a fabrication. You know, they threatened to go public with this gripe, and they eventually went to Izzy from the Washington Post to have her tweet that they disagreed with, or they said it didn't happen or whatever. Long story short, as their defenses went on, they admitted A, Backstrom threw a stick, and B, that Backstrom cursed.
Right.
Which honestly were the two things that I was kind of hazy on, because "fuck this league" was definitely said, and we all heard it. So basically at the end of the night, you know, I already knew that it had happened and whatever, but again, I understand why they made it a big deal, but I generally agree with you, which is that by making it a big deal, you've now
made it a bigger deal.
Made it a bigger deal than it would have been. It would have just been a guy being frustrated about a loss. And I went to Backstrom after the game and I said, "You know, I heard you get kind of upset after the game. You know, what was that about?" He's just like, "You know, just losing the game, you know." And you know, and he elaborated his head and only scoring one goal against the Penguins, because you can't beat him if you're going to score one goal. So it just would have been that. Everybody at some point has given the anecdote from the locker room where such and such slammed his helmet down or whatever the fuck. Like, it just happens.
It's this league part that, like, somehow is going to take down the Caps. Like, referees would turn against the Caps in Game 5 or something. Like, some weird conspiracy theory thing you were worried about.
I think in light of the Tom Wilson suspension, which we'll get into, and I think in light of later on, you know, Holtby and Trotz both were kind of upset about the coach's challenge not going their way because they were convinced that
It wasn't close.
They were convinced that Hornquist had used his stick to move the pads of
the leg pads.
Move Holtby's pad, like, kind of like poke it and move it.
I watched that replay. Like, I'm pretty pro interference calls, but that wasn't interference.
But again, like, it's just,
but that's what he was mad about, for sure. The review and all that. And
sure.
So what? Like, great. There were two things that really annoyed me about people who were replying to you on Twitter all day yesterday. One was like, "Who cares? A hockey player mad about something after the game, blah, blah." But meanwhile, like, 900 people replied with "who cares." So clearly a lot of people care when a hockey player actually shows emotion. And it wasn't even, like, defamatory or, I mean, he said the word "fuck," but who cares? He's an adult. We all say the word "fuck." And I also love the one guy who is in your mentions trying to explain to you, the journalist, how off the record works. Was that on the record or was that off the record?
I'll get to that in a second.
I love that guy.
The other thing I love is that I used half the quote in the tweet and then had people click through a link to read the rest of it. I don't know if you guys know this. It's kind of amazing news. I don't fucking work for Twitter. So people that put all of their news on Twitter without you leveraging that platform to bring people to the place that actually pays the bills, mm-hmm. they aren't doing their job right. They're just giving away news. Mm-hmm. Like, I say this with respect to guys like Mackenzie and Dreger who put news on Twitter all day long. Why? Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't – if I was TSN, I'd go to those guys and say, look, you guys – no one else has the news. You guys are like the insiders of insiders. Tell us the news. We'll put it in a thing, and then we'll send out that thing on the Twitter.
And it's weird because they're basically SportsCenter ESPN people too. TSN's the same deal.
The thing that's amazing is that for Elliot, Dreger, and McKenzie, it's all the same thing. They put it on Twitter, and then some intern at SportsCenter TSN has to then take their Twitter and put it on the website. And it's completely ass backwards. They should tell the intern, here's what I heard. Fucking Jim Montgomery is the new coach of the Dallas Stars. And then the intern's like, Jim Montgomery's the new coach of the Dallas Stars. And then they send a link to Dreger. And then he puts the link out on his Twitter to his million followers or whatever the fuck. Like, that's the way it should work. Now, the off-the-record thing's hilarious because Jason Botchford took a run at me last night.
I saw that. I thought he was just being funny.
I hope that he was being funny.
I don't think he genuinely believed because of the whole Joe Thornton.
I tend to believe
thing.
He was, but the problem is like a lot of his followers have heat with me, so they thought it was like him. They take their cue from him, so they think that he's coming at me. But like, I actually went back and looked what I wrote when the Thornton thing went down, and like the thing I said he was sort of in the wrong a little bit, like in the sense that Thornton says this while everybody's scrumming somebody else, and then Botchford went with it. And that was the only hinky thing about it. Because the rest of the column I wrote about it was, it's your job as a reporter to report the news.
Mm-hmm.
And like,
and the way off the record works is, if Joe Thornton screams that and then says, hey, that was off the record, like that doesn't mean it's off the record.
Yeah, and the way
like,
off the
other
record,
people have to be like, okay.
And the way off the record works is that if you scream, fuck this league, in an area where the media is being corralled to come talk to you, that's not an off-the-record situation.
Mm-hmm.
You mean, if you say, fuck this league anywhere in the bowels of an arena and someone hears it, they could easily just say, I just heard Nick Backstrom say, fuck this league. So it was a giant hassle. I'm not engaging on the topic anymore on Twitter. I figured we could talk about it here because I know that you're very curious about it.
Because it's hilarious to me. It's just hilarious how people who don't do journalism think they know what off-the-record is, seeing like the Caps PR machine go into effect to like put the fire out that doesn't even really exist.
I know you guys all believe this about me, that like I'm a creature of ego and whatever. I said this during the John Scott thing. I'll say it again. I don't want to be the fucking story. I never want to be the story.
Like if I was standing where you were and heard that, I would have tweeted the exact same thing.
Yeah.
I don't know why other people who heard it didn't, to be perfectly honest. Probably because
the reporter from DC did, and she kind of saved my ass.
But like if Rossi heard it, why didn't Rossi
want to get her name? I don't know, but like he wrote about it later. No, it was a situation where I honestly, like, the last thing I want is to okay, so it's Sherry Burris is her name. She's a reporter. Let me find her her profile. Well, anyway, my Wi-Fi's blown up.
Wi-Fi.
Okay, she's with NBC Washington. So kudos to her for tweeting that thing, because then it became a second person that was like an eyewitness. And I went back to the Capitals and said, okay, so when are you going to shake her down?
Yeah, apparently they weren't going to, I guess.
Yeah.
But here. So like I thought maybe I want to play devil's advocate. Maybe you misheard him. So I want to throw some things out there that maybe Nick Backstrom might have said. Okay.
Because this is if maybe the four or five of us who heard him say, fuck this league, misinterpreted
like,
it.
Maybe there's like an echo in the hallway or, you know, you were looking at your phone and weren't 100%. Like the guy who thought that, did you see that tweet where somebody from Toronto thought Cassie Campbell watched all 82 Winnipeg Jets games before preparing for the playoffs and he was praising her? Which, by the way, was a mathematical fucking impossibility for her to do that between the end of the season and start of the playoffs. That's a whole other thing, too, that I thought was insane. Okay, how about this?
Okay.
Fuck this Beeg, because he was mad that Jay Beagle played so much in the last 2 minutes.
Or he turned around to say, like, hey, fuck this situation to Jay Beagle.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a distinct possibility that... It was a B instead of an L, even though those two sounds are nothing alike.
Okay, so there are many leagues. Mm-hmm. So maybe he meant the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Mm, it's true.
No?
He could have meant League of Legends.
That's what I was going to say, League of Legends. Maybe it's like a video game thing. Mm-hmm. No? What about the League of Shadows?
Maybe he means Tim League, the president of the Alamo Draft House, because he doesn't like their policy of having to not talk during the movie.
Okay. but like League of Shadows, maybe he just saw The Dark Knight Rises and was really upset with what Bane had done to Gotham.
That's very true.
Okay.
That's very true.
Fuck the...
That goal is scored in the darkness. Gunsel.
How about fuck the League of Leagues, the Jonah Carey three sports at once sports league? Maybe he doesn't like fantasy sports.
Yeah, having to draft middle relievers and such.
Fuck this lease. Maybe he thought the lease on the arena was too unfair for the local taxpayers. Maybe.
Or he finally got an offer back from that Audi dealership that he had been going back and forth on email as he was heading back to the dressing room.
He pulls out his phone on the way off the ice. He's like, fuck, this APR is insane. I'm not doing this.
It's a horrible APR.
How about fuck this Lee? Like maybe it's like Lee Majors or Lee Pace.
Mm-hmm.
It could have been that.
Mm-hmm.
He could have said fuck this Lee. Like he turned the word this into an adverb and put L-Y and he was talking like fancy. Like, oh, fuck this Lee. No? All right. And fuck this Leeds. Maybe he's upset with the Premier League soccer team Leeds. And he was like, oh, Leicester City beat Leeds again. Fuck this Leeds.
Or he's upset about buildings not being LEED compliant for the environment.
Or fuck this Leed. Because the Capitals never got one in Game 4.
Right.
Could have been upset
it's
with
possible.
I'm just saying. Or
conversely, he was upset that his teammate was suspended. The Caps didn't get a call on a coach's challenge, and they called too many men on the ice penalty at the end of the game to negate any chance they had of rallying.
They had so many guys on the ice. Like, I love when it's like a too many men, and like you can just tell the one guy jumped too soon. And you're like, oh, they had like just seven dudes just flowing around on the ice for like 10 seconds.
Let's just talk man to man for a second.
Okay, who's the other man in the room? Is it me?
He's over here. He's producing the show.
Okay, I was going to say. It's not...
So, I know that everybody has a real hockey heart on for Winnipeg and Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
It's been great. Hockey's great. Rallying for 3-0 lead. Very exciting.
Fantastic stuff.
Yeah, game 2, awesome sauce. Game 3, awesome sauce.
Mm-hmm.
Give me Cavs Penguins every fucking
time.
It's
just they so hate each other.
They do.
They like don't like each other at all. It's great.
In a world of manufactured rivalries in the NHL, like
this one was manufactured for a long time because they never played each other in the playoffs.
It was never manufactured because the Capitals and Penguins always had a rivalry, but Ovi versus Sid was manufactured. But now they actually play against each other on every shift.
Right,
it's crazy.
I know, like it was so funny. All the talk about taking hitting out of the game and stuff. Last night, at the end of the first period, Ovechkin absolutely pasted Crosby. And it was the kind of hit that would exist in hockey forever, no matter how you change the rules.
Yeah.
And that was a hit born out of how much they probably hate each other. That hit wasn't even necessary. He was just like, fuck you.
Someone was asking me about the rivalry earlier today on the radio, and I'm like, you know what's amazing about this rivalry? When you have a lopsided rivalry, let's say like Jets-Patriots all those years, right? Like, usually... You have one team, the underdog team, that's like, we fucking hate these guys with every fiber of our being. We'll do anything to beat them.
Mm-hmm.
And the other team's like, who are you?
Like Red Sox-Yankees up until 2004.
I believe there's a gnat flying around my forehead where this crown is located.
I never think of you. That's basically that rivalry.
Yeah. But this rivalry is the best because even though the Penguins have... just mastered the Capitals and just won every championship and the Caps lose these series in spectacular fashion. The Penguins fucking hate them.
Yeah.
And like, it's not even a situation where they can be like, oh yeah, you know, two consecutive cups, three cups. We beat the Capitals each time. We are the elite. Here is our throne. You know, you should see me in a crown. But like, they can't be like that because they honestly hate the Capitals so much that's like, we can never lose to these fuckers.
Right.
It's the best.
Well,
the best.
I mean, I've heard that the reason why they can't lose is because the NHL's fixed.
It is totally fixed
for
the Penguins.
Absolutely fixed. That's why Tom Wilson got 3 games is because it's fixed.
And also why the Penguins got that goal awarded to them in Game 1 that was completely, utterly, and fantastically over the line.
Which one in Game 1?
Remember the one where you saw white between the puck and the goal line?
Oh, no, that wasn't Game 1. That was Game 2.
Was that Game 2? Oh, that's right. One was the three-goal rally. Yeah,
yeah.
In Game 2.
Like that was absolutely a goal. They just can't call it a goal.
Can you imagine? Yeah. This is why, God bless Nick Backstrom, because fuck this league. For a decade, we've heard, well, the only thing that we need to find here to make sure the puck is in the net is white between the puck and the goal line. They showed a replay. Oh, look, everybody has the same screen grab. There's white between the puck and the goal line. Well, that could easily be a buildup of snow.
But it could. It was just like I was saying that when that happened. It was just like the offside review in the game 82 between St. Louis and Colorado, where there's clearly white between the puck and the blue line, but in theory, there could be – it could not be. But
they both can't be right. Like, either this whole
– no, they rule them
line,
both the same way.
But this whole line they've been selling of got to see white between the puck and the red line – the goal line. And now, the white might just be a big snow buildup, like a fucking Frosty the Snowman building up. Like, it's just like you can't have it both ways.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's if you see the white on the overhead shot. Like, I understand the angle from, like –
parallax effect.
But like, if not for the overhead view of the puck hitting the blocker behind the goal line last night, you would have not called that a goal, for sure.
I saw our friend Seth Rohrbaugh in the press box last night at the Penguins game, and there's the goal controversy, the Malkin shot that, you know, luckily there was a bunch of angles that showed the puck was clearly over the goal line. And they showed
nobody, by the way, until the start of the second period.
And so people on Twitter started talking about the parallax effect on this goal. And Seth comes over. He's like, hey, man, just want to let you know about this tweet I sent. Like, sure, what's up? He's like, yeah, last time I saw a parallax beaten that badly, it was by Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
And I'm like, you know, I so value Seth's friendship because he knows inherently no one will give a shit about that save for this man right here.
Right. You know what's funny is I thought about making that same joke, but I thought nobody saw
no
that movie.
No one's going to know it.
No one remembers that the name of the bad guy in that movie was Parallax because the other bad guy was the British guy, the bald guy.
No, it wasn't. Oh, you mean Mark Strong, Sinestro.
Yes. Yeah.
He wasn't the bad guy yet. He became the bad guy at the end, yeah.
He's going to be the bad guy in the next movie.
Right. That's right.
There's nothing sadder than watching a movie where like they set up the sequel and then the sequel never happens because the first movie's so bad and nobody went to go see it.
Right.
Like Man from U.N.C.L.E. does that a little bit, although I like that movie. But I love movies like that.
Yeah,
like,
failed, the graveyard of failed franchises.
Yeah, it's so great.
It's tough. You know what franchise I always – I know I don't quite – I'm guessing it's because everybody got too big for it. Mm-hmm. Why wasn't there ever a sequel to The A-Team?
Oh, dude. That movie was great.
Yeah. I really – like that's a movie where if I'm in like a hotel and I'm just like fucking around, I need to iron a shirt or something and The A-Team's on, I'm throwing on The A-Team.
It's fantastic. And it's never on good cable. It's always on regular cable where they edit out all the curse
It's always
words.
On FX.
Yeah, it's always on FX.
It's not a USA Network quality action movie. It's an FX quality action movie.
But it's like – it's so good. Everyone's so good in that movie. Like everyone.
And everyone's perfectly cast. Like fucking Cooper's great. Dude who's in District 9 as Murdoch is great. Oh, Liam Neeson's great.
Yeah. You know what it is? I think like after that movie came out, Bradley Cooper kind of went from like dude who's in those kind of movies to like Oscar leading man by himself movies.
Right.
And like Liam Neeson's whole Taken thing took
off. Liam Neeson's like, I can make so much money if I just do this by myself.
Yeah. He's like, oh, I have a particular set of skills required me to work alone. Yeah. And not share any of the money with you three idiots. Get lost. And like the one bad guy who's like the mercenary guy who's like
good. Patrick Wilson.
No, like the guy who works for Patrick Wilson.
Oh, the other guy.
That guy. Like that apparently that guy has been in like three movies ever. I remember like looking him up. I'm like, why is this guy not in more movies? He's like a voice actor, but like he was good. The whole movie's seriously, I could
who
talk
was
about
the was it Jessica
hour.
Biel was the girl?
Jessica Biel was the girl. The guy from Mission Impossible who runs the IMF plays her boss. He's good in that prick boss role. Like,
yeah.
Then John Hamm shows up at the end randomly.
Right.
Like
John Hamm for a while had a good streak of showing up randomly at the end of movies. He was also at the end of Sucker Punch for no reason as well. He played a nefarious doctor at the end of Sucker Punch.
Which one was Sucker Punch?
That was the one where like Zack Snyder made all that money with 300 and they're like, Zack, what would you like to do, buddy? And he's like, here's what I'd like to do. I'd like to do a movie where a bunch of girls are in an asylum and they have these crazy fantasy sequences where they're all wearing lingerie and shooting machine guns at stuff.
I feel like I should have seen that movie. It's on the description. Wait, is that the movie where the girl has the machine gun leg?
No. That's the part of Grindhouse. The Sucker Punch is the other thing. And then they're like, okay, buddy, well, that sounds good. What else would you like to do? I'd like to do an animated film about guardian owls.
Oh, that's that guy?
Those are the two movies that Zack Snyder made. And then he makes these two movies, and they're like, you know what, buddy? These movies weren't all that good, but what if we just handed you the keys to the DC Cinematic Universe? How about that?
This guy made Owls kind of interesting, I guess. They referenced it on 30 Rock once, so why not just give him this?
You made a movie about girls in an asylum shooting machine guns and lingerie. How about we give you the most heralded intellectual property in the history of comics and a man of impeachable integrity?
when we get to Infinity War later, I feel like I got some DC connection.
We're gonna spoil the shit, but it's gonna be at the end of the show. Don't worry about it.
We're gonna give you a little warning.
It's not like I'm gonna sit here and be like, Mr. Lozo, I don't feel so good.
That's people are mad about that meme because it's like some of them are mean. One guy did one with like the Twin Towers.
Yeah, that is not funny.
Right.
We both agreed with the funniest one was the Microsoft logo.
The Microsoft
Windows logo.
Like honestly, I laughed at the one that I sent you from Cannonball Run.
Yeah, that was really funny.
Dom DeLuise was disappearing. Yeah. That one was really good. But yeah, like some of them are like over the line, and some of them are just like spoilers because people were like, "What's this one about?" And they were like, "Oh, at the end of Infinity War, blah 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 blah." Blah, blah. Like, no, don't tell me that.
All right, before we get too deep into other stuff, let's revisit Tommy Wilson. I said at the time of the hit, show me another angle that shows me him hitting his head, and I'm fine with it if it's a suspension. And lo and behold, there was another angle that showed him clearly hitting him in the jaw.
Why does the NHL have all these secret angles of stuff
it's
we all
really
want to see?
It's creepy, isn't
right?
it?
Like, man, I have no idea. I guess there's no way to know if that Malkin goal went in, and like 20 minutes later, it's like, here's a definite picture. NBC, I don't know if you noticed it, but like NBC kept showing the angle from like front facing the net, that angle side with Malkin diving, and like it's the same thing as Hornquist. You're like, that's in, but I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And then the NBC cuts to this other angle from inside the net where the puck is clearly in the net,
but
it's later.
It's later after he knocks it in with his glove,
right? And I'm just like, I feel like NBC is doing like a propaganda campaign on me to not. And then Elliot tweeted the thing where it's like, here's the image, and it was like Malkin diving puck over the line. And I'm like, why does that not exist on the broadcast when it happens? Like, it's
fake
a 10-minute
news.
Review. Totally,
sad.
It's very fake news. Mm-hmm. The fake lying at NBCSN once again. Propping up fake Gary Bettman. Like, it just, I don't know. I can't.
Well, the president knew he was giving the Penguins $150,000. He knew exactly what it was for. Fucking Rudy. Fix a fucking pothole, you hack.
God. But yeah, the Tom Wilson suspension was, it felt like a package deal where like they were suspending him for everything he did.
Oh, you felt that way?
One. Like, I don't mind him getting suspended 3 games at all, but
I hate that idea, by the way. I hate the sum total of your sins kind of suspensions. The only time it was ever great was when James Neal got it in the Penguins Flyers series that time where they gave him a suspension because he just started running around the ice trying to kill everybody in that one game. They're like, I don't even know what this is for, but you're just going to not play next game.
But didn't it feel like that? Didn't it feel like that Tom Wilson hit was more like 2 games at most, but then they gave him 3 because of Wenberg?
I think they gave him 3 because of the 2 suspensions in the preseason. And I also think that, like, you know, they've been waiting for him to fuck up again. And I don't think they thought he fucked up on either the Wenberg or the Dumoulin hit, even though the Wenberg one he did. Like, the Wenberg one should have been a suspension.
The Dumoulin one he fucked up. I thought the Dumoulin one.
No, dude, come on. Dumoulin stopped short when Ovechkin's coming at him.
I stopped short. That's my move. But he stops short, but he still raises into it. Like, I still feel like he picks the head.
By the way, second greatest Seinfeld reference of this series, along with there was a second spitter. Because, Sidney Crosby. Can we just talk about that for a second? We're going back to the top.
Like, this is the thing. Is like, Nashville-Winnipeg is better hockey. But you don't get a thing where someone's like slowing down and chopping up video to make it seem like Patrick Laine spit on PK Subban. Right. You don't get that.
You don't get a moment where Paul Maurice is being pestered by a local reporter about whether or not fucking Philip Forsberg hocked a loogie on one of his players. It's just, I mean, it's incredible. So for those who don't know, because it kind of came and went with a record speed, Sidney Crosby was briefly accused via the social media and in a question to Barry Trotz and a couple of other Capitals players of spitting on Evgeny Kuznetsov in Game 3. And basically it was based on a 2-second gif where Crosby's head sort of jerks back and then jerks forward like he's hawking a luge.
As if anyone spits like that.
Right.
It's not like in a play. Like that's just, you know what I mean? Like where they overemphasize the spitting motion to show they're spitting.
It was like a Buster Keaton spit. Like, and so it was like... And then a title card comes up and says, I spit. Yeah.
Boy, Buster Keaton references. Welcome to the podcast, everybody. We're very up on pop culture.
So then another video comes out that literally shows Alex Ovechkin horse collaring Sidney Crosby, like scruffing him like a little puppy and jerking him back and forth to make his head kind of bounce back and forth. So it looks
what was he doing?
He was jerking him back and forth.
So his head would, his head was pretty good.
Right. Huh. So his head, and then some spit came out.
Yeah.
No. So Barry Trotz gets asked about this and you're just like, you've got to be fucking kidding me. But anyway, back to the shit that actually did happen. Mm-hmm. I thought 3 was too much. I thought 2 would be all right. I thought, and the reason I thought 3 was too much was, and this is the Department of Player Safety's own failing. Boston Bruins, Toronto Maple Leafs series. Nazem Kadri, for the second time in the period, finds Tommy Wingles and hits him from behind, this time with injurious effect. Mm-hmm. And it happens where he skates across the ice to do it, and it happens within the vicinity of the Bruins taking a definitive lead in that game. Mm-hmm. So now he's boo-boo face. This is the most...
He's what?
Boo-boo face.
What does that mean?
It means he's sad.
Oh, okay.
So
I think he had a bruise on it.
No. So, like, this is the most intent to injure plays that we've seen maybe this season, and that got 3 games. And Wilson, even if you think he hits the wrong way, and even if you're like, the injury is catastrophic.
Right.
Exactly. It's still a bang-bang north-south hit. Mm-hmm. It's not something where he's taking a Rafi Torres flying forearm into the guy's head. Right.
That's why it feels like a cumulative package. Like,
yeah, that's why 3 bothered me. Because like, I feel like if you give 3 to Kadri for doing what he did, and you give 3 to Wilson for doing what he did, then you are clearly not going with what the intention of the Department of Player Safety should be, which is to penalize the guys that are intentionally trying to hurt people.
Mm-hmm. It's the concussion and the broken jaw. That's why it's 3 instead of 1 or 2. Like, if he had gotten up and skated away, maybe it's 1.
That was the other really interesting thing about this. So I talked to player safety folks this week before the suspension and after it. And what I find fascinating about it is they're always very emphatic about the injury not playing a role in determining if there should be a suspension.
Right. Yeah.
It's in the CBA that the injury is part of the punitive phase. Like, how bad the injury is how you can determine how long the guy gets suspended for. Mm-hmm. This time, they use the broken jaw as kind of a bellwether for, like, okay.
Obviously,
he obviously hit his head to break his jaw, because you're not going to break somebody's jaw by hitting him in the fucking shoulder. So,
you know, Sami Vatanen got a concussion on a non-head hit. Apparently.
Right. Oh, yeah. Don't even start with that. Sure. I thought that was really interesting. That, like, for the first time in covering the Department of Player Safety, they used an injury as sort of a guide to, well, there's got to be more here than what we're seeing on these replays.
Yeah, they've seemed like recently. I don't. They've probably been doing it forever, but it seems like recently they've really cared a lot about how much the head snaps on a hit, which, again, seems like a weird sort of barometer for using scientific fact about how hard a guy's head was hit. But, I mean, broken jaw, concussion. Clearly his head was hit really hard.
We're going to get into more stuff on player safety and hits to the head later. Our question of the week is, should there be a zero tolerance policy for hits in the head? I wrote about it on Friday, and Lozo wrote about it earlier this week.
Yeah, I got to yell at you about your calm.
That's fine.
Your dads are going to yell at you at that point.
Huh?
I was telling the listeners, your dads are going to yell at each other.
It's fine. Your calm was great. It's about how people...
Yeah, you couldn't link to me, by the way. You're going to passively aggressively mention me in your calm. You don't even give me the link.
I didn't mention you in my column.
Yeah, the whole smoking cigarettes on a plane thing. That was my whole bit.
Oh, no, I didn't. I wrote that well before I even read your column.
How dare you, sir?
No.
Linking out the sky.
Did you also use the word Neanderthalic? Because I use that in my column.
I might have gone Cro-Magnon based on the evolutionary chart for where I wanted
to be. I wouldn't have gotten that from your column. Your column for me was a billion words about how everybody's a cuck because of the lockout and they'll just watch hockey anyway.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, so that was the main idea I got from it. It's clickbait otherwise, because I could just read that on Twitter and
everything's
then I don't have to click
clickbait. Everything's clickbait. You made me click a link that had stuff in it.
You know what's not clickbait?
Oh, boy. What, Greg?
When you head over to SeatGeek.
That's never clickbait.
Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated and confusing, but there is a better way to buy, and that's with SeatGeek, the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. Whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out, or need to find the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. We both have the SeatGeek apps on our phones. It's by far the easiest way we've found to shop for tickets. You can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, you can instantly find seats. Lozo and I use SeatGeek a lot during baseball season to find baseball tickets. I think SeatGeek is a good way to find a lot of tickets to baseball games that are, like, affordable and in good spots.
Hockey's really good, too, because I feel like most people obviously use us for hockey, but, like, a hockey ticket you can get for $40, then you have for $20.
Yeah.
Like, baseball, you can get a $10 ticket. How does it work for baseball on, like, the super cheap tickets, I wonder? Because, like, you can get a $12 upper decker. Not when you shit on the top part of your toilet.
I mean, certainly like wouldn't pay $12 to do that. I could do that for free at anywhere, especially in like a Starbucks.
By the way, speaking of shitting everywhere, what's up with phantom pooping everywhere now? There's like a superintendent in Jersey who's pooping on fields. There's a jogger somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently in this building, there's phantom pooping
in the building
as well.
In which we do this podcast, there were signs all over the bathroom saying, the bathrooms are only for people on the seventh floor and their customers and their guests. Do not use these bathrooms if you are not on the seventh floor and fall into one of these categories.
Right.
And I've came to find out it's in the women's room.
There are women
in this building who are coming up to the seventh floor to drop massive deuces all over the bathroom.
Like, are they like the James Bond of pooping where like they kind of like slink in, slink out? You never know. There's no camera shots of them. I remember doing that in college. Like in college, in the quads at Rutgers, there was like the men's floor and the women's floor. Mm-hmm. And obviously the women's floor was always way cleaner, their bathroom.
Right.
So like if the weekend was there and there were nobody up there, you would go up there and take a dump sometimes.
That's kind of creepy. But like, I mean, I always, you know, we've talked about it on the show before. Like,
the bathrooms are co-ed.
Well, that's good enough.
I think.
When I always do the courtesy shit in a hotel if I'm staying with somebody where I would go to another floor, like a conference room floor, and use the bathroom there rather than stinking up the room. That's what I do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's, yeah, you're very
We've talked
much,
about it
yeah,
before.
You're
yeah.
very much a courtesy pooper.
I am a courtesy pooper.
When you stay with
Here, there's been no courtesy, apparently. And I can only think that, like, to put up signs.
It must be so bad.
There must be, like, a Taco Bell test kitchen somewhere in this building where the situation in that bathroom was out of hand to the point where you had to put up signs.
Like, I'm surprised there hasn't, like, I guess, like, it's really hard to catch someone in the act doing it because you can't put cameras in the bathroom. That's illegal. You can't do that.
It's just like.
So how do you set up, how do you, like, make the sting operation work?
Can I see your ID badge?
Slide your
ID. I have a feeling you're a fifth floorer. This is the seventh. You don't belong here. Can we talk about this after I get out?
No. I've been working on the seventh floor for 3 years. I know what everyone's shit smells like. That's a fourth floor shit. Get out of my bathroom immediately or I'm calling security.
I know for a fact nobody here had Vindaloo today. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. They save you time and they save you money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And you get the most bang for your buck because SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats to fit your budget. Best of all, Puck Soup listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app today.
Mm-hmm.
Enter that promo code S-O-U-P. That spells soup. Soup. That's promo code soup.
Soup.
For $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
I wonder if they're leaving soup in the toilet up here. That's the issue. It's just big old poop soup.
I once used soup to get off from school. I found a can of microwavable vegetable soup.
Oh, you did not.
And it was like 7 o'clock in the morning or 7:15 in the morning. And I did not feel like going to school, so I poured vegetable soup in the toilet in our upstairs bathroom, and I'm like, Mom,
no way, and it
I
worked.
Did, and it worked.
Did you grow up in a 1980s sitcom? Like, how did that work?
I wish I could remember what inspired me to do that, other than maybe just the desire to not go to school that day and just like hang out and play Nintendo.
But like, don't you think your mom, like a couple days later, would be like, "I guess I'll make Gregory some vegetable soup," and then notices the vegetable soup's gone, and then like connects the dots.
You think my mom is such a mom that she chronicles how many cans of vegetable soup she has?
Well, I mean, how many can there be?
Well, Gregory, I took inventory and.
But like you would need to mix it with like oatmeal, I think, to have like more of a thicker consistency. Otherwise, it would just look like soup.
I assume that maybe she was hip to it, but maybe she wasn't. But also, like, she should know I'd never eat green beans, so why the fuck would green beans be in my throw up? You know, there's stuff in a vegetable soup that obviously would not be
right.
Like in my body. Like in theory, at that point in my life, it's probably all breakfast sandwiches and like Hostess cupcakes. Want to say?
Gregory, why is the toilet filled with Taco Bell burritos?
No, this was pre-Taco Bell. Taco Bell only happened when I got a car.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, there was no Taco Bell in my life at that point.
So, like, most people, when they get a car, they're like, now I can get some chicks. You're just like, nope, now I can get some tacos.
Right.
Yes.
My life was a Springsteen song going to a Taco Bell. Trips like us. Baby, we burrito run.
I want to drive with you, Wendy, on the streets to the Taco Bell in the mall. It's near my place.
Gordita Road, Gordita Road, Gordita Road.
Pooping like a thief in the night. I ate Taco Bell and something's not right. Wendy, I need a doctor immediately, please.
Santa Fe is coming to town. It's a deep cut. Our guest today on Puck Soup, to keep along with this Washington-Pittsburgh Lollapalooza going on the show today, is Sean Gentile, a fan of the podcast, but also a friend of the podcast. Mm-hmm. You may remember him from such podcasts as Stick to Sports.
Yeah, I remember that podcast used to exist all the time, but apparently Brian never has time to do it.
We discussed that podcast and many other things in our conversation with Sean Gentile, who, of course, is a sports columnist now for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, and also wrote what I still believe to this day is the greatest tweet in the history of hockey.
Yeah, I already know what it is.
A few hours after Emerson eat 'em, Emerson poop 'em.
See, the tweet I like best from Gentile is the you've been struck by a joke explainer. Because whenever people explain my jokes back to me, that's the first thing I think of is that tweet.
Stay for the end of the interview because we get into one of the most important topics in my life these days, which is sandwiches in Pittsburgh and Sean's unending desire to shit on Primanti Brothers.
Yeah, I'm with him on that. It's fine. Uh-huh. I just don't think it's – I think it's great if you're from Pittsburgh.
All right. When we come back, all the playoff series we didn't talk about plus hits to the head and other stuff. So here's Sean. Sean Gentile is the – what are you at the paper?
I am the janitor slash I do some short order cooking.
Short order cooking.
That's mainly. Now I'm just sort of all purpose opinion guy.
Do you dig out the dried ink from the printing press?
Yeah.
When you print the paper,
I'm a typesetter. it's a trade. I figured I would cover my ass for when I inevitably lose my newspaper job.
Do you ever think about, because as you know, I used to work at a newspaper in Virginia, and you still work at a newspaper. Do you think that like we'd both be dead if we worked back in the days of real newspapering? Because I have a feeling like they probably didn't know about safety standards, and there are probably like coal miner stories for people that worked at newspaper where it's like I got ink poisoning and I didn't know it.
That's absolutely what it is. I guarantee that there's some sort of chemical that was used that would have like either the chemicals that were used in newsprint or the fact that I would have inevitably smoked like four packs of cigarettes a day would have taken me out very quickly.
I mean, there is that too. Like, we're not considering about the other health aspects of it. Like, for example, like, I'll file my story as soon as I finish this whiskey and it's 11 in the morning.
Yeah, it's everyone trying to be, you know, whatever, Hemingway, when they're writing about, you know, baseball or horse racing or whatever people did back then.
For those that are wondering, we're here at the PPG Paints Arena in Pittsburgh watching some randos kind of skate on the ice that the Penguins will be using in a few hours. Like every time I go to an ice sheet in the city, there's always somebody fucking on it. Like little kids playing like travel hockey at like noon, and I'm like, isn't there like a truant officer that should be here trying to get these fuckers back to school?
Yeah, seriously, I that's a function I think of. There's more ice here than there was 10 years ago or 15 years ago, but there's still not a ton. So what you see is stuff like this, stuff like the practice complex in Cranberry gets used a lot. So yeah, it's, you know, they're still just trying to squeeze stuff in where they can. But this is bizarre. It's 1:55 and we're watching a beer league game.
What is the most what's the more obscure naming rights sponsor? PPG Paints or Consol Energy? Who is more obscure?
I didn't know what Consol was when they
is
got
it Consol?
That. It is Consol.
It's not Consol?
Yeah, I actually just got if you keep saying Consol, you will just out of habit get like electrocuted by David Morehouse. Like there's a buzzer below your seat.
What did you end up find out? What did they do? What is Consol?
Fracking mainly.
Oh, so you were sponsored by the Pakula family of Buffalo. Yeah, that's fantastic.
Basically, PPG Paints or PPG, I guess it's enough of like a civic institution here. Like that.
But what did they do?
They used to make plate glass.
So wait a second. They're called PPG Paints, but they make glass.
It started out as Pittsburgh Paints, Pittsburgh Plate Glass.
Okay.
That big building downtown that has like the gold. It's glass with four spires.
Oh yeah,
looks like, you know,
the spire,
whatever,
the
like
glass
nice,
spire building.
Nice castle.
Yeah.
That is named after PPG and has been since its construction. But you know, over the last couple of years, yeah, I don't know, man. They made the, you know, you see it once, you see it a thousand times. People pivoting from glass to paints.
Now you grew up here, right?
Mm-hmm, I did. I grew up down the street.
Did you cry when the igloo got blown up?
At that point, I was aware of what a horrible place it was to work. So I realized that it was past time. But yeah, man, like my dad, My dad worked for the company that managed the arena back in the day, like in the early 90s. So I was there a lot as a kid. I had a lot of fondness for it. It was sad, but I mean, Jesus, that outlived its usefulness.
When you say it was a horrible place to work, what did you mean?
Like you had to pick a locker room, I don't know,
like you just mean by how antiquated, antiquated
like
it was.
It took forever to get downstairs.
Yeah,
the tunnels were a disaster. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was a bad place to see a game. Honestly, it was a bad place to go take a piss in between periods.
I mean,
so it was over with.
Like you're at the game and a fucking helicopter falls from the ceiling. I mean, you know, it's the worst.
I can't believe security there was so lax that they let a fireman get on the ice and play goaltender during the Stanley Cup Finals. Can you believe it?
It got blown up real good. I remember the first time I started coming here for like playoff shit. I was really taken aback by how old the igloo was, but also I was enamored with how much this... I've always said this about Pittsburgh, you can correct me if I'm wrong. There's a real sort of southern collegiate football feeling about Penguins hockey here.
Are you saying that because people like to get real drunk in the parking lots before games? Right. That's such a tactful way to put that.
See, I was really hoping that you wouldn't pick up on the demographic thing I was trying to get at. But no, I'm saying that like the city kind of, like everybody wears their Penguins shit. And like the city kind of shuts down a little bit when the Pens play, and I'm sure it's the same thing for the Steelers. But I'm sorry, the Steelers. But
it's worse. It's obvious. It's much worse for them.
But you don't get that all the time in hockey towns in the U.S. where you get that feeling where everybody shows up to work in their like Penguins, the fucking golf shirt.
Yeah, right. Like I'm walking through Shadyside earlier today.
Now, what is Shadyside?
It's just a neighborhood.
It's not a retirement home.
No, yeah, that's where people go to die. No, I'm on Walnut Street. There's shops and coffee places and whatever. And that's this morning or, you know, whatever, a little bit before lunch. And one out of every two people is wearing like a jersey or a shirt or whatever. And that's standard here. And it wasn't until I mean, growing up, I thought that was normal. And I eventually realized that it certainly was not. Like, you don't go everywhere and see people wearing, you know, Steeler jerseys in church or whatever. And that's par for the course.
People that go to Rangers games don't even wear Rangers jerseys at the games. They just show up in their fucking suit.
What's endlessly cool to me here still is, you know, granted, part of it's because this team has had so many jerseys over the last 10 years. Even
you got a favorite?
I like the current ones. I like the current white ones. Mm-hmm. I think.
But did you like the futuristic, sleek, metallic penguin face that they had during the Martin Straka years?
Like the black ones with like the gradient.
Side? When they changed the logo to look
the
like
pigeon.
Something
to the pigeon.
To the pigeon.
Yeah, they made that change when I was, you know, 7 or whatever. So that still, in a weird way, is like
you're nostalgic for
that's
it.
That's like the one I associate with the team. I like the diagonal Pittsburgh black ones that Snoop Dogg wore in the Gin and Juice video. That's very, very important.
I always associate different players with different jersey styles. Like I said, like Martin Straka would be like the pigeon one. Mario is your classic one. The all yellow one would be who? Like the old-ass yellow one.
Roberto Romano, like one of the Lemieux tank era right. players.
Right. Who would be the diagonal Pittsburgh one? Would that be?
I associate that with Jágr.
Jágr, okay.
I know that's because that one specifically reminds me of when Lemieux was sick and missing time in the early 90s or whatever, after the Cups.
Right.
So I associate that with Jágr for sure.
Now, as far as people in their jerseys in this town, if you were going to give me the top five most owned jerseys and most worn jerseys,
hockey,
yeah. So would Sid be number one right now? So
absolutely.
then Sid, then Mario, or then Malkin?
I think it's probably Sid, then Malkin, and then Lemieux, and then
now who's next though is the question.
See a lot of Letangs.
Mm-hmm. More Letangs than Flowers.
You see a weird amount of Flurry Vegas jerseys floating around.
Is that right?
Dude, there is Vegas merch floating
around
the city.
I'm sure
there is. Absolutely. You'll see one tonight for sure.
That is so, okay, let's say, so Letang would be fourth, but so who would be fifth? Would it be Kessel, or would it be somebody old school, or who?
I would say it probably is Flurry, seriously. Mm-hmm.
What's the, if you saw 100 jerseys in a day, how many of them would be Jágr?
100 jerseys in a day.
Yeah.
At this point, I would say probably six.
Does that upset you that there's still that divide between him and this organization?
It does. It does because, again, like I said, do I remember the cups in 91 and 92? Like, yeah, yeah, sort of.
Right.
I was five or whatever. So I was like at least semi
cognizant
of it. But like, you know, when I really started, you know, turning into an avid sports fan that was capable of like remembering shit that happened on a day to day night. Yeah, that was Yager's team.
Yeah,
for sure. So I maybe have more fondness for him than, you know, the average person. But no, so, it does bum me out. But I think they've taken steps really over the last couple of years to, you know, mend that whenever he's done playing for real, and whether it's now or who knows when.
Did you think he was coming back? Remember that one year when Bilesma was talking about, like, Bilesma was like, I got such a Woody right now talking about that man on my power play, and like everybody thought he was going to sign him, and Yager watch was going on. Did you think that was he was coming back?
100%.
Yeah.
I 100% did. And then I think to an extent we all sort of knew it would be that money would be a consideration.
No, with Yager?
I mean, we have a casino now.
You do.
Like, you think that would at least be a check in the box like a few years ago? But no, I mean, money and power play time and a guaranteed spot on the top six, and now all that shit was important to him, right? So that was an easier sell in Philly. But no, I 100% did. When we were tracking flights and there were all sorts of rumors about him being at the airport and all that all that shit, I for sure thought it was going to happen.
Your fandom's interesting because I feel like the Penguins are a team with, like you said, very distinct eras.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got your Lemieux fans and you got your fans that were sort of Lemieux, cancer years.
Mm-hmm.
For lack of a more nuanced term.
No, I mean, that's the
truth. And then you've got, you know, the fans who probably were worried the team was going to leave, and you got fans that came up during the Sid era.
Right.
And is there any generational bandwagon looking down your nose at people that are just like Sid fans?
I try not to do that generally. Like, if you're a 23-year-old person right now, I'm not gonna deduct points for you not going to,
because you don't know,
for you not going to games in 2003 and watching, you know, Ramsey Abid and Matt Murley and all those plugs
have love for Frank Pietrangelo or
I don't feel that way. But I will say, like, I was a senior in high school in 2004, 2003 2004. So I watched a lot of shitty hockey because they couldn't give away tickets.
Right.
So me and my friends, like, whatever, like someone's uncle would have had a season package that he held on to or whatever. He would try to get rid of random games against the Senators on a Tuesday night. So like in the 2003-2004 season alone, I probably went to 20 games at the arena. And that was definitely weirdly formative for me, and I think that was important too for a lot of people here. It was a necessary amount of like humbling, I think, that needed to happen, especially back then. So I think you can sort of divide it up. There's a little bit of a dividing line between people who remember, and not that it was some protracted amount of time, because we are spoiled beyond belief here, but like, when you're 16 or 17 and faced with the real possibility that team, you know, could leave at any given moment, that I think that made people, you know, for my generation who were born in the mid 80s, late 80s, I think that kept them honest to an extent, and maybe they've forgotten that in a very real way. I think that's very possible. I think we have, you know, an unbelievably spoiled fan base here who loses perspective at times. But that, but those couple years, yeah, those were formative, I think, for a lot of people.
Well, for me,
if nothing else.
Let's talk about the fans here. So you're a big time columnist now. Everybody reads you here in Pittsburgh. you're probably, it's like you then Madden as far as popularity in town.
Yeah, that's scientifically proven. Yes.
And so, what is the toughest part about serving at the pleasure of the Pittsburgh sports fan here in Pittsburgh? I have to imagine that there's some nuances in working here that aren't found in every place.
I think that it kind of comes down to that the vast majority of fans are either in, and this goes for the Penguins, this goes for the Steelers, this goes for the Pirates, even though interest in them couldn't be lower at this point.
Right.
Like there's two distinct camps. I'm not saying like everybody falls into one of these, but the vast majority does. It's either Homer Supreme or total fatalist.
Right.
It, I don't know if that's I don't.
That's kind of yeah. I've noticed that.
I don't get it. I don't. Uh-huh. I don't get why there's still such a healthy amount of negativity around this team around these teams, but mm-hmm. there for sure is, and I think that's. I think that's part of it. That's something I try to do is just, you know, you try to bring perspective to it. That sounds lame, but there's an irrational streak here.
Right.
In either direction.
Right.
That I think is a little bit wider than it is in other places.
But is it a yin and yang though? Like for example, like I know that the fatalist thing probably defines the Pirates right now, but mm-hmm. like when I read coverage of the Steelers or the Penguins, I think, you know, sometimes there could be overwrought panic about certain aspects of the teams, but I think that overall mm-hmm. it's a boom time. People are happy with Tomlin and people are happy with where the Penguins
are,
obviously.
I would say the majority of people are, but like, dude, after the Steelers lost to the Jaguars in the playoffs,
yeah.
like, people were calling for Tomlin's head, absolutely.
And, it's fucking and, nuts, though.
And there's
isn't it?
And there's oh, it's completely insane. Yeah. It's out of control.
Yeah.
So you know, transitioning back to that from my last job, which was just covering hockey, you know, league wide, just sort of generally has been interesting because I was a little bit divorced from it.
Right.
And yeah, it's been interesting to watch. Like there is, and I'm I honestly am sort of glad that there is that fatalist streak, even though it gets annoying, and even though. You know what? Like I grew up here. Most of my friends are mm-hmm. are either still here or came back or whatever. And I talk my friends in my family off ledges more than I would like to. But there is something endearing about that.
Right.
In a weird way. Even though it does get annoying.
Now you and I met through hockey. Mm-hmm. So did we first meet when you were at the Sporting News? Was it?
Yeah.
Was
yeah.
that your first hockey gig or what?
Oh yeah, yeah. I started with the Sporting News out of college. It's a great time to find a job in the summer of 2008.
Well, I mean, in the auto industry, probably, yeah, but right. other than that,
yeah. What's better than finding an auto job or a banking job in 2008? Like getting a job in the media. So no, I started with Sporting News in 2008. Was just you know
what was that like?
Desk. I worked for a product that was doomed from the start. It was a daily like email PDF based like subscription thing. It was daily and free,
like The Athletic.
Exactly.
Oh, except it was free.
It was the,
oh, okay.
it was the
gotcha.
Exact. Yeah, yeah. Right. This is when people thought free shit still worked. It's crazy. No, I got a job as a copy editor for that. It was called Sporting News Today. And just sort of moved around. Ended up speaking of The Athletic. I was somehow Craig Cousins' his editor when I was like 20.
I remember that. Yeah,
4 or 23.
He went from the AJC to the Sporting News, was it?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. He went from covering the Thrashers for a couple years to being the national NHL guy at Sporting News.
I don't know if I ever told the story, but he almost worked for Yahoo.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I told the people on this podcast.
Yeah.
Like we had Craig on the line in 2010.
Oh, I know.
And he was going to be our national hockey guy, a job that Nick Hotstanicka eventually got.
Yep.
And because of Yahoo's human resources inability to give Craig a firm answer on some contractual details, he freaked.
Dude,
and decided not to come.
It's still that is. I was there for every step because Craig's my guy. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like
he's my guy too. I love him, man.
I mean, and seriously, I have. I am where I am sitting here with you in a press box, like in no small part because of Craig Cousins. But no, I do. I remember when all that when all
I was
that,
at, I was at I think it was during on. Like the Olympics or something, and I was just like following this whole thing along from long distance, and he's just like shit didn't work out or whatever, and I'm just like what?
How?
No.
How?
Yeah. I mean, Nick was awesome, but I've always had a real, as everybody knows, affinity for Craig. And fuck, this is twice now that we almost worked together, me and him. And just, you know,
dude,
were it not for the siren song of the Athletic Detroit.
Oh, I'm leaving for the Athletic, by the way.
We should talk about that. Like, what's that like now that the Athletic? So you have the Athletic here and DK Sports Online here, or wherever the fuck.
Yeah.
And so, how is it now for you working for the establishment media to have all these interlopers coming in? on subscription basis.
how should I answer this? The Athletic's approach here is not. It's obvious they tried to kill DK Sports.
Yeah, they took Josh Yoey, they took
Mark Caboli. Those are two of the main, you know, attractions there. I think from being on the outside, like, it seems like both are doing fine. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. It wasn't the kill shot didn't happen that I think people were anticipating. And I like most of those guys.
Yeah, so good guys.
Good, you know, whatever. But no, I'm.
All right.
I don't know. I don't. I don't. I don't. I, like,
you don't want to say anything bad because you want to work for them eventually.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. That's clearly it. I don't say anything bad about anybody. I'm a big fan of ESPN and a big fan of the Puck Soup podcast.
If you guys
want to hire me, you know, fine.
Let's talk about podcasts. What happened to your podcast with Lambert?
I wish I had a better answer.
So it's called Stick to Sports.
Yeah.
How did you and Lambert get together? How did you meet? How did you like hook up?
The internet.
Because you guys are of the like mind. I think you guys are sort of cut from the same cloth. And yeah. I always wondered how you ever met, because he's a Boston guy and you're a Pittsburgh guy.
And just doing similar stuff. It's Twitter.
Making people laugh, getting chuckles.
Yeah, that's it, man. I'm a very serious person. I don't know what you're talking about. We'll bring that back at some point. That's on me. I got busy and lazy. Basically, that's sort of what it comes down to.
Do you ever think that like me and you and Lozo and Lambert are kind of the same?
Yes.
Like we're sort of like I don't know what would be the comparison.
I think we're playing to the same base for the most part.
Like
variations on a theme.
When I think of those old fucks on like the sports reporters, and they're like, oh, we all came up together, shoe leather and blah blah blah, and I shook Larry Bird's hand. I think about like me, Lozo, and Lambert, and I'm like, we're all kind of like doing the same thing at the same time, and that's why kind of like we're all sort of like friends.
Yeah, I think about that all the time. Like I think our approaches to the work are pretty similar.
Yeah,
we're similar personality wise, but again, that's the way it is when you find friends, just generally.
Yeah,
like rightly, like you're all sort of cut from the same cloth and variations on a theme, really. And I feel that way about us.
If you were going to take our hot takes and look at us as a thermometer, who would be in the red? I would be in the red.
Absolutely.
See, I always thought that like Lambert would be in the red, and then I would be on the other end because I try to be Johnny Journalist sometimes. Like I thought that was my out on hot takes, but you're saying that I've got the hottest takes.
I think your top line is higher than everybody else.
I have a higher ceiling.
Yeah, like, but maybe Ryan's standard is farther in the red than anybody else. But yeah,
where's Dave on the scale?
Dave's at the bottom of everything.
Dave's at the bottom. Where he wants to be. He's very happy there.
I work for a local newspaper now, so whatever.
Oh, man.
Hey, we have a winner.
Looks like the white team is very happy about this decision, but it looks like the black sweater goalie is waving his hand saying no goal. It looks like maybe it was scored after the buzzer. We have a lot of controversy here in this beer league game.
We also have penalty box cameras? What's going on here? Did they just they blew the whistle? They blew the horn at 2:15? I guess it was just timed.
Yeah, they have a camera in the penalty box. And now there's just some guy's ass on the jumbotron. It's great times.
It's a very chill ass.
All right. So when you were at the Sporting News, you wrote with humor.
Yeah,
you were good. Did you ever get in trouble with anybody NHL wise or anything with some of the stuff have you written?
Sure.
Yeah, and that did it make you feel really good?
I aim to get in trouble. Clearly, I think just generally, you take the serious stuff seriously. I think you recognize whenever stuff's important.
Yeah.
But my approach is just, you know, the day-to-day business of writing about sports is silly. It's inherently silly.
It's a very silly thing.
Yeah,
it's not to be taken seriously.
I think it's important to realize when you're writing about serious shit, right?
I feel like there's a happy medium between like mm-hmm. Bruce Arthur mm-hmm. and then us. Mm-hmm. Like there's a middle part where it's like you can be solemn and serious about everything that can be a mirror to society in sports, but also realize that it's just fucking dumb.
At the end of the day, and that's a balance that I try to hit. And sometimes, Sometimes I don't, because my default is to crack jokes. Like that's just my personality.
Are you someone who cracks jokes even in the most dire of times? Are you like someone who's at the wake?
I'd be
I'm the same way, and it's hard 100%. It's hard to be that person sometimes, because like my defense mechanism is humor,
for sure, and
I know that there are times when it doesn't belong there, but at other times I'm like, I don't give a shit because I think other people need this.
Yeah, it's either complete. I'm either like completely removed making jokes, or just deadly like like yelling, angry, you know, overly emotional.
Right.
Like that's sort of I got some extremes going on.
What makes you laugh in 2018? What is something that you find funny in 2018? Does SNL make you laugh?
Good question. I feel like I've been kind of out on this season.
Yeah.
I haven't watched it as much. But no, I'm a big SNL guy just generally. Like,
yeah.
I am just historically. But yeah, I haven't watched as much of this.
Does stand-up make you laugh, or does it make you sad that stand-up can't be as funny as it used to be because now everybody monitors the acts and reports to the internet about them?
I feel like I listen to more still, and this is an ongoing problem. I listen to more podcasts talking about comedy. than I do actual comedy.
Right.
Than I do comedy.
Yeah, for sure. I listen to, like, when I listen to like Bang Bang or right. other stuff, like I'll sometimes sit back and realize like I've never heard these people not on a podcast.
No, I know. And that's crazy. That's why, like, you know, like whatever, like the Birthday Boys, the sketch show on IFC, like right. I've watched 2 episodes of that.
Right.
But like I listen to Doughboys
all
like,
the time
every week? Yeah. Like I know I am much more familiar with like Mike Mitchell's, you know, friends in Boston and his thoughts on Carl's Jr. than I am like his work as like a sketch comedian.
I love the Doughboys. I think it's one of the greatest concepts in the history of podcasting. As Doughboy fans, just be honest here, show is better when they were in the studio, not at the house.
I think so. I think so. And
it was more focused. It was less haphazard.
I just had a talk with somebody over the John Gavris episodes. Like, should Gavris be on every show?
Right.
Or should it be like a special thing? And I'm still not sure.
Doughboys
episodes with John Gavris are those are my favorite thing.
They're incredible.
Right? Those are my favorite thing right now.
They're incredible. I will say though that my Doughboys listening has gotten something. I mean, guest based sometimes, but also it's very much now restaurant based.
Like
I just saw there's a new Olive Garden episode that dropped. Of course, I'm going to listen to that.
I'm in. That was today.
But like they start picking these obscure places in California that I've never heard of, nor will I ever go to, and I'm just kind of out on it.
Like the tour that they this is a Doughboys fan podcast now, by the way.
Right.
The tour
talking dough.
The tour through Texas that they did when they went to like, you know, whatever Torchy's Tacos and in the Kolache place and all that, like I didn't know any of those places. Like it's got to be one or the other.
Right.
Like it's got to be a guest I want to see or a restaurant that I want dealt with.
Do you miss the freewheeling days of the Sporting News now that you're like a super serious columnist here in Pittsburgh?
I am not. My job is not that serious. We screw around so much. Yeah, I do. Like part of me does miss the way stuff was working with Sporting News. Like Sporting News, you know, 2013-14 era, that was a lot of fun, and we were really close to doing something cool with that group, and it just never just didn't quite
did, yeah like, I would
didn't,
know I would
didn't quite come
I wouldn't
together.
Know anything about like a place being really awesome and then all of a sudden it changes on a dime and
no,
it really
that's,
sucks
that's definitely not so something really that's not something you've ever dealt with personally.
Can I offer you this purple coffee mug with a giant Y on it? I have no use for it anymore.
What does that mean?
But I mean, like, in the sense that, like, I remember, I mean, like, you still take chances as a writer.
Yeah.
But at the Sporting News, it could be, I think, I feel like you took a lot of chances at the Sporting News.
I did. And that's something that is absolutely not a function of, like, what the Post-Gazette wants my role to be. Mm-hmm. Like, my bosses, Tyler and Alex, support me across the board.
Right.
It's more now that there's just... That's the challenge of writing local versus mm-hmm. writing national. There's just a smaller pool of stuff to draw from. So could I sit there and do something, you know, insane about like the day to day of the NHL or whatever? Like, yeah, for sure. But that's not really my job anymore. Like the there's just less opportunity to do crazy shit when you're talking about covering whatever. Let's be generous and say five teams in this town if you incorporate Pitt.
Right.
Like, there's just less opportunities to do weird stuff. And that's a challenge, but it's something that, you know, I've been doing this for a year basically.
Are we counting both Pitt's basketball and football teams? Does that get us to five?
I'm legitimately excited about Pitt basketball. I think they're going to be no one's going to read shit about them, but they're going to be fun to cover because of Jeff Capel. Yeah, so I'm but like that's something you couldn't care less about. You don't care about Pitt Hoops.
Oh, no.
But
I didn't even know it was in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, how could you know? There's no way to know.
All right, as we wrap up, we should go back to food. Why are Pittsburgh sandwiches so good? Is it because I have a theory about Pittsburgh sandwiches, and I'm going
to
lay it on you.
I would love to hear this.
I feel like Pittsburgh sandwiches are great because of the fact that it was a steelworking town, and I think of a bunch of guys sitting on a girder, yeah. And they've got their metal lunch pails, and they've got their hard hats, and they've got sandwiches the size of bowling balls that they're going to eat.
Yeah.
Is that where sandwich culture came from in Pittsburgh?
So, like, I think... You know, the standard is Primanti's, right? And I have some.
It's overrated.
I have some thoughts about that.
Go ahead, lay it on the people about Primanti's.
The overall like lore surrounding Primanti's is that it was steelworkers who didn't have time or space to, like, pack an entire lunch, so they threw all of it on bread. That's not necessarily true.
All right, let's talk about Primanti Brothers. Why is it overrated?
It's bland. That shit is bland.
What about it is bland? The coleslaw is bland. The meat is
coleslaw,
bland.
The coleslaw tries to be vinegar slaw. It's not. It's not really.
Okay.
I think the bread is fine. Like I would put other stuff on on that bread. The French fries are not seasoned. And
they're not. Like when they put them on the sandwich, they're not
potatoes.
Seasoned.
It's
potatoes.
It's,
yeah.
It's just and it's a it is a ton of potatoes. So you got that, you got the slaw, you throw like sort of a flavorless tomato on top of it. You already got a lot of mush before you make it to the meats and the cheese. And you know, I think if I went there, I would get a hot sausage sandwich and I'd be okay.
Yeah.
But for the most part, if you're not doubling down, if you have to throw hot sauce all over something to make it taste like anything, you've gone wrong.
Do you feel about Primanti's when people come here and go there like people in Philly feel about people going to Pat's and Gino's?
A little bit.
Philly people are always like, you're a fucking tourist. Like, go to this other place for a cheesesteak.
Whatever, yeah. Like,
yeah.
Dallas Andrews is famous enough.
Yeah.
But, like, Dallas Andrews is really good. Like,
yeah.
I certainly better than Gino's or Pat's. I feel like it's the same thing. And look, people come here, they want to do it. It's whatever. There's a decent chance that whenever we watch this game tonight, they're going to have like B-roll of like people making of like people at Primanti's making the sandwich.
Like, every time fine. The last couple of years, they always send they sent like Milbury there or something, and he's like, "Yeah, give me a sandwich with fries on it."
Dude, I would have been really really disappointed if I didn't hear one of your impressions in person on this podcast.
I don't do any really impressions. I do a Madden impression.
Yeah,
but I hesitate.
I've heard it in person.
Here it is. Here's the Mark Madden Pittsburgh impression.
And that's why Sid and Gino are the two greatest players in the history of hockey.
Tested IQ in 166.
Hold on.
Here's Candlebox.
See, this is back when he used to have this show with the music on it, but he doesn't have music anymore, I think,
dude,
right?
Candlebox is like the perfect band for it, too, because it is. It's like the local butt rock station still.
As a Pittsburghian or Pittsburgher?
Pittsburgher.
Who gives a shit? I do, Greg. Oh, okay.
Do.
No, fair enough. What do you... we just say we're from Jersey, by the way. There's not a New Jerseyan or New Jerseyite. In fact, don't say ite. It's very, very close to a lot of parts of New Jersey. So what is the cuisine here in Pittsburgh that you'd say defines Pittsburgh? Is it the sandwich? Is it the pierogi?
I feel like if you had to pick one, it might be the pierogi.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great sandwich town. I grew up here and then left and then came back, and I'm just blown away by what this is. Like my Pittsburgh Board of Tourism.
Here we go. From the Pittsburgh Board of Tourism.
It is.
John
it is so the leaps that they've made this city has made as a food city over the last like 5 or 10 years are gigantic.
Yeah,
it's a great place to eat. There's a wide range of stuff. It's not all sandwiches. It's not all pierogies and burgers.
I find it perfect that like one of the better restaurants that's in this area is literally called Meat and Potatoes.
Yeah,
I mean, but that's like such a Pittsburgh thing. Like
it is.
That's like, what else would you call it other than the old closed down mill?
Yeah. I was wondering where you're gonna. You started talking. You didn't have the end in sight. No. It is true. Like that, there is all the food here is kind of grounded in that. You know, it is a meat and potatoes kind of town. So, mm-hmm. You know, the best place is still probably traffic in that. But no, it's a meat city. I would say that. Like one of the best restaurants here right now is called Morcia, and it's in Lawrenceville, and there's just all sorts of great stuff.
Okay, finally, what is your favorite pirate name that Doc Emrick would in theory say during a broadcast? Because I said mine before, and it's Mike LaValier.
I mean, I gotta go with Don Slott, who was a partner with Mike LaValier as the catchers on those Pirates teams of the early 1990s. Mike LaValier was Spanky, and Don Slott was Sluggo.
You go around the horn, you've got Sid Bream, Jose Lean, Jay Bell, a third baseman I don't remember, Bobby Bonilla.
Steve Buchel was
Wait,
a third baseman.
Was Bonilla the third baseman?
Bonilla played third.
And then he played right. Yeah, so this goes to Bonds, Van Slyke, and Bonilla. So who was the third baseman during the Bonds, Van Slyke, Bonilla?
Steve Buchel played a lot of those.
Steve Buchel.
Jose Leaned. His career came to an end when he was arrested pantsless and drunk driving a vehicle.
Is that right?
Goodbye, Chico. Yes, it absolutely is. There was some drug element to
his pants. He was drunk, so he didn't have pants because of that.
I don't know. He was Porky Pigging it in the front seat.
Well, a bit. That's all, folks. Sean, where can people read your genius?
Postgazette.com, post-gazette.com. That's where you can find all of it at this point.
And do I have to pay to read you?
No.
Do I have to have my ad blocker off? Probably though.
We don't do that anymore, Greg.
Okay.
There's a limit. The incognito mode workaround no longer works. I will.
Can I do what I do when I go and read like Boston.com, which is to just quickly cut and copy, or I'm sorry, highlight and copy the text before the thing comes up that says I have to pay to read it?
It's a good question. I don't know if you can do that.
Does everybody not do that? Just like you highlight the text and then copy it and then put it in your notepad real quick so you can read it.
I have ways of reading Boston.com. That's probably the way I should put it.
You can't do that with The Athletic, though. The Athletic's got a pretty good, well locked down on their paywall that you can't even sneak around it.
Those tech geniuses, buddy. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you.
Yeah, Myrtle's not letting you get any fucking quan from his pocket.
No way, man.
No way.
He's got a 3 foot tall. 2-year-old to feed.
I was gonna say
he's the world's tallest child.
He's got deep pockets because he's like 8 feet tall.
He is for sure as tall as I am.
Well, Sean, I'm very happy that we got to do this. In fact, I believe you threatened me when I saw you the other day and said that you were going to be angry if we didn't do this.
You asked me to do it, and I said I would have been hurt and pissed if I didn't eventually come on. Yeah, I was starting to get a complex.
It's
about
fine.
It, dude.
I mean, you're only here because Shelley Anderson said she was busy.
Great lady.
Yeah. Next time we'll have you in studio and have Lozo there so he doesn't feel left out.
All I wanted was to hear an impression from you and to hear Dave sigh into a microphone, and I got one of those two today.
Do you listen to Biscuits, his podcast?
Yeah.
Does he sigh a lot? I don't listen to it, obviously.
It's less.
Does he sigh a lot? It's less. I mean, he finds me more exasperating than he does.
Who doesn't find you more exasperating than McIndoe? Come on.
Thank you, Sean.
You're welcome, Greg.
Our thanks to Sean Gentile of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. You can read him at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. You could read him on Twitter, Sean Gentile. That's Gentille.
S-G.
And it's Sean the proper way and not like Sean Mendez.
Not like Sean McKenzie. Sean B.
And now I feel bad. I was hanging out with Sean McKenzie in Pittsburgh, and now I just realized I shit over his
nice,
name.
Nice job.
Sorry.
Actually, technically, you're shitting on Bob because Bob named him.
Mm-hmm.
Sean didn't pick Sean. Bob did, so yeah, wow.
That's true.
Wow.
You can't pick your own name.
Starting a fight with Bob.
Can't pick your own religion, can't pick your own name. What's up with being a baby?
What's the deal with growing up?
What's the deal with babies?
This is what we need. We need a podcast fight with Bob, because Bob's huge. Like, this would be good for us.
The Bobcast?
Yeah, we can be rivals now.
Send in a question to his Bobcast mailbag that's like, why are you suck at Puck Soup rules?
Yeah, make it like a really mean question. Like, why is Puck Soup awesome and you're only like pretty good?
We should probably get into a feud with like Spit and Chicklets, but like the problem is now Bissonette's part of the show, so that's an ass kicking. On top of the fact they're all from Boston, so they probably all have bats and can beat us with bats.
Well, I mean, to be fair, Ryan Whitney could probably kick our asses before Biz got there too. So now it's like me and you versus Ryan Whitney and Paul Bissonette.
Right.
Like, that's not really that's not gonna end well for us.
Right. And Rear Admiral, it looks like he might be able to run fast, so I think we'd be in trouble there, too.
Yeah, and apparently I can't run a half mile without my knee hurting anymore. So.
What happened to your knee? You got old man knee?
I don't know, man. I just ran straight ahead. I didn't dodge anything or turn. I just ran, and my knee was like, nah, we're done for a while.
Mm.
So don't get old.
Congratulations to the U.S. team at the World Championships for beating Canada in a penalty shootout, as the Associated Press called it. Why is it a penalty shootout?
The classic penalty shootout that we all know.
Heading to the penalty shootout.
It's time. Oh, here comes Brad Marchand on a breakaway shoot chance.
They've called 10 penalties on players to establish the fact that they can all take penalty shootouts. Cam Atkinson scored. We beat Canada and Connor McDavid, and that's great. Yet another loss for McDavid. Meanwhile, in the rest of the Stanley Cup playoffs... What say you about this Boston-Tampa Bay series, currently tied dos-dos, I believe.
I believe it's 2-1.
No.
They play tomorrow.
That's right. They play today. So it's...
Did they play today?
Oh, yeah. May 4th. Today, yeah. May the 4th be with you. Tampa leads 2-1, and maybe I just predicted the future. But if
all
I didn't...
All the other series are 2-2.
Your thoughts on Tampa and Boston. I think Tampa is doing that thing where they're surprising people by how tough they are, because... You look at Steven Stamkos and you're like, oh, they're a bunch of wiry blondes. But it turns out that they're kind of tough a little bit.
You're too blonde. Well, I think Nikita Kucherov established himself as a possible murder death ball guy in the Devil series.
That's right.
Here's the thing about Boston-Tampa. It's objectively the second best series, right? Because Nashville Predators and Winnipeg Jets are the two best teams in the league. And Tampa-Boston are the two best teams in the East.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know how like if you look at someone and you're like, that's a really attractive person. Like, that's a physically attractive person, but I'm just not attracted to them for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Like, clearly Vegas-San Jose is the fourth best series, but I'm way more interested in Vegas-San Jose and everything there than I am Boston-Tampa.
Completely.
And I don't get why. Because, like, clearly, Bergeron, Marchand, Pastrnak, Stamkos.
The Knights are new. And the Sharks are fun. Like, the Sharks are kind of a fun team.
But Boston-Tampa's fun. That's the series I'm least interested in turning on.
I'm not into that series. It's because I feel like the next round is going to be exponentially more interesting for either of those teams than this round is.
Yeah, the conference finals in the East will be way better than the conference finals in the West.
It's going to be super fun. Like, I'm interested in the Golden Knights series because I feel like that could be the end of their road, potentially. And the Sharks are a fun team. And this Tampa Boston series, like, okay, whoever, just tell me who wins. Like, skip to the end.
Right. There's no like okay, so Pittsburgh Washington is just two good teams that hate the bejesus out of each other.
Right.
Nashville Winnipeg is just two super good teams, and San Jose Vegas are two evenly matched teams that aren't as good as Boston and Tampa, but they're evenly matched, and like Vegas is new. So yeah, that's probably why like Boston Tampa, even though it's objectively a really really good looking series, I'm just kind of like, nah, I'm really more in Vegas. Sorry.
Watching Boston fans react to Rick Nash is like seeing someone date your ex.
It's great, isn't it? Like I told you,
right? It's exactly the same template. It's like one game where he's like beast, and then they're all like, I don't know what all this Rick Nash playoff stuff's about, and then it's like, we should scratch him.
Ryan Donato is basically the guy he is, like, but 10 years younger, right? Can't we just use Ryan Donato instead? Actually, Ryan Donato might go in for Brad Marchand next game, I think. It was a thing I saw today, because Marchand and somebody else is questionable.
Yeah.
But that's we've all done it, man. We're like, oh, but Rick Nash isn't scoring, Greg. But you know what he does? He does all the other things.
Yeah,
away
all
from
the
puck.
Things.
Away from the puck.
Lots of shot attempts from Venus.
He's the king of that.
I wrote the top 20 heel moments for Brad Marchand this week for ESPN, and
saw that. I haven't clicked on
it's
it.
It's great.
20?
Just 20. Yeah, and they're all legit. There's nothing on that list that doesn't belong there. One I completely forgot about. Had you forgotten about the time in Vancouver, not the first time those guys played after the cup final, but the second time in Vancouver when he pretended to lift the Stanley Cup and kiss it.
No. Like when?
Do you remember that?
During the game?
During the game. So he taunted the Canucks twice in the game. He pretended to kiss a Stanley Cup ring on his finger, and then he hoisted an invisible cup and kissed it as he skated by the Vancouver bench.
Oh, I got
to
see that.
It's great. It is a trip down memory lane. I have to admit that one of my most underrated Marchand moments, I think, is like he got that diving fine this year. And he literally is like, I honestly don't give a shit. It's such little money.
Great. Seriously. It's $2K.
It's great.
Guy makes $6 million bucks a year.
I freely admit that I wasn't amused by the Marcus Johansson allowing him to play in the All-Star game bit, which of course worked out fine because he healed it up there too. Mm-hmm. But like, I mean, overall, he's an exponentially entertaining player.
I'm sort of worried about his mental well-being because, like licking and biting. I still don't think he actually bit the linesman. I think that's just like an optical
illusion. He didn't bite the linesman.
Like,
but he definitely
like the jersey.
He definitely licked the Komarov.
I just wonder if like he's okay. I'm just kind of worried about him.
You're worried about him going on TMZ and starting to talk about the history of slavery.
Well, I don't think he's that far gone. I don't think he's that insane. But like, I don't know. Like, he just does stuff where I'm just kind of like, yeah, he's being a pest. But I don't know. He's got an oral fixation that I think is
nothing wrong with that. He was probably like me. I had a pacifier until I was like six.
Also, by the way, the fucking officiating in this playoffs.
Atrocious.
The idea, like growing up, or even lately, we know that when a guy gets tripped in the middle of the ice in a 2-2 game with 4 minutes to go, it's not getting called.
No.
It should be called because it's a trip, and tripping's illegal, but we know it's not going to get called. But now we're at a point where all those other like caveats don't exist anymore, where you can have a breakaway with 2 minutes to go down a goal, get your hand slashed the bejesus out of, and they're just like, eh, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Like, that's insane to me. People were defending that as a stick lift. You can't lift a stick coming from the top down.
Yeah.
That's not how a stick lift
that's
works.
That's not how that works.
It's insane.
Unless we're in the upside down.
Like, yeah, from the upside down, then that's a hell of a play by Strawman.
Right.
But otherwise, like, that's a textbook slash.
It really was.
And it's all because referees are cowards and don't want to call. Because if you call a penalty there, you got to call a penalty shot. And the idea of calling a penalty shot, I don't want to affect the outcome of the game.
Yeah. But as you know, the NHL is after Boston. Yeah, the NHL really wants Boston out of these fucking playoffs.
Yeah, they want a Winnipeg Tampa final.
They don't want the totality of the most highest concentration of hockey fans in the country. They don't want those people to be engaged in the playoffs anymore.
No, they want to. Yeah, they really want it was a Devil's Vegas final. That's what they were going.
Why
for.
Do people in Buffalo watch the playoffs so much? Every single year, the Buffalo ratings are through the roof. Is there just okay, theory one, there's fuck all to do in Buffalo. Probably a good theory. Theory two, they're so sad that they just want to watch winning hockey in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, that's what it is.
You think it's what it is?
Like, I saw a great tweet. I don't know who tweeted it, but it was a great tweet, and it said that the reason why young people like Airbnb over going to hotels is because when you use Airbnb, it allows you to do travel and then have the fantasy of owning something.
Right.
And that's what watching playoff hockey is for Buffalo. It's the fantasy of being in the playoffs that you get to watch and enjoy. That's all it is.
Okay, so Boston, Tampa, whatever. I picked Tampa. Did you pick Boston? I forget. What did you pick on this show? I guess is the real question.
I took Tampa. I took Tampa because the Boston series hadn't ended yet, so I was pro-Tampa no matter who won that series.
Okay.
So I'm still
– all right.
Even though some guy on Twitter after one game was like, you still like your prediction?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, actually. Mm-hmm. Still do.
Yeah, I got a lot of that during that Vegas series too.
Yeah. What do you think about the Sharks now?
What do you think about the Knights now? Mm-hmm. Nighty night.
That's why you can never pick a sweep on a podcast, because the second that other team wins one game, you still think it's going to be a sweep? Well, no. Actually, the other team won a game, so I don't think that anymore.
Nashville and Winnipeg has been insanely fun. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, the game two of that series was one of the best playoff games in a long, long time. Game three was epic in its own right, too. Everybody was kind of getting on Nashville for blowing a 3-0 lead. I feel like this year, every 3-0 lead has been unsafe. Like,
yeah.
There's been so much goal scoring, and Winnipeg's great at it, and they're on home ice, and Nashville was leaky.
Yeah. I'm glad I missed most of it, too, because the Penguins game was on at the same time as that comeback.
Oh, yeah.
It was great.
It's great scheduling.
Nothing. I still can't believe that they scheduled it the right way yesterday for games four for both series.
But couldn't do it
three,
yeah.
Both are weeknights. They're not weekend nights.
I believe a wise man once said, fuck this league.
Seriously, it was funny because I missed all three Preds goals, and then I put it on, and they scored that one goal, that first goal that bounced off of whatever, and I was like, whatever. And then went back for 2 minutes. 2 minutes the other game, mm-hmm. I come back, and Winnipeg is going insane. It's 3-3. I'm just... It was ass-eating season up there, apparently, too.
I saw that. Ass-eating season 69.
I have so many questions about that because... That jersey was also gigantic.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that might have been stitched and sewn at home. I don't feel like they bought that Winnipeg Jets jersey somewhere and had it done. I think that mm-hmm. was completely homemade.
Mm-hmm.
And also, when is it not ass-eating season? Is mm-hmm. there like a time when you could be like, hey, honey, I'd like my ass eating?
Yeah, it's not like deer hunting. Like I feel like it's always in season.
Sorry, it's December. It's off season.
So when you say that someone stitched together at home, do you mean that there's some serial killer that has a bunch of Winnipeg fans in a pit in his mm-hmm. house, and he's stitching together a Winnipeg jersey from those fans?
It puts the tongue in the asshole.
I need my ass. I need my ass.
How has nobody found that guy? I assume it's a guy, by the way. How has no one found that guy and like sat down with him and been like, tell me everything.
Yeah.
Tell me everything that brought you to this moment in your life.
Yeah.
And he's like, I want to know.
And he's like, well, you see. Because it's muffled because of
Cause his mouth is attached to
there it is.
A buttox.
There was also a jersey foul someone sent me from the Vegas Golden Knights that was the number 69, and the nameplate was Free Sex Cams.
Oh, so they were like advertising for like porn online. Yeah, that's smart.
But here's the thing. There was no .com or anything after it. So, like, you know.
Yeah, if you Google free sex cams.
You're like going to come up with a lot. I mean, there's probably a freesexcams.edu for all we know.
There was also a guy at the beginning of the Sharks broadcast who was walking to the game, and the camera was behind him, and his name, it said 69 on the back, and it said Todd, and he had a rat tail.
I saw a guy in a Sharks jersey that said Falloon. That's crazy.
Whoa, was that like a Urban Dictionary sex act to get Fallooned?
Yeah.
Like, is that what that is?
Urban Dictionary defines ballooning as when you're being filleted, but she also has a balloon in her mouth and she's slowly blowing it up at the same time. That is ballooning.
That actually probably
is it right. I'm not going to check. I'm just going to assume. I'm going to assume that by the time this podcast posts, it'll be on Urban Dictionary.
Actually, you should submit that and take credit for it because that is exactly what it is. So it's like the long balloon you like stretch out and you blow mm-hmm. it up and it like it's like a big giant
sausage.
So
you're doing it concurrently? Like so you've got and then there's the balloon next to it.
Oh, see, like I was picturing just like the long balloon that they make like animals with.
Right, I know what you're talking about.
You're thinking like it's
so. Is it being blown up like parallel lines kind of thing?
Oh no, I was picturing like the uninflated balloon in there.
Is she making animals?
No.
Okay.
No, like I think you can you insert the uninflated balloon
mm-hmm.
and then you put your mouth to the part where you blow it up and you blow it up and then. It blows up while it's in the butt. That's how I was picturing it.
Oh.
Well, how are you
well,
doing?
I said filleting, so I thought it was like...
Oh, you were going... Oh, so yeah. I was picturing it more of being a butt
right.
hole situation
right.
opposed
like
to
a
penis situation.
That would be bungloon.
Oh, yeah, I get it. Okay, yeah. Cunnilooning. Cunnilooning.
Who listens to this fucking podcast?
It's falloon season.
Somebody
bring that to game 6 if your head says it's Falloon season and we'll give you a code for SeatGeek.
There you go. That is soup anyway, that you already have. Your thoughts on Pekka Rinne?
Same as always. You never know. Like he's insane. The game, the overtime game, he could not have been worse and more susceptible to a goal in the third period than he was in that game. And then the overtime started and he's just like, yeah, I got this. No problem. Point blank, Patrick Laine. Gotcha. Which is just what he is. Like he has bad stretches, and he has stretches where he has like a 940 for 2 months, and now he's kind of in the midst of a. I don't even know where he's at right now, postseason wise. But I feel like he's probably below 920. But actually, maybe after the shutout, he's probably up there. But I'd rather
have him. Been fun. He's played pretty well overall. Although that game 3 was a weird game, man. Like I was sort of concerned a little bit about Nashville when they started to talk about like we stopped playing, like. It's a playoff game, though.
I know. It's not game 42 against the friggin' Islanders.
It's a playoff game against a team that literally every game you played with them in the regular season was like 21-20.
Right.
And you're just, we stopped playing.
3 goals in 9 minutes. That was another great thing, too, about the Bruins-Tampa game. I think you were at it, so you maybe didn't hear it. But it was the game 2 in Tampa, and Tampa was up 2-1 super early in the third. And Tuukka Rask made an insanely good save. And Pierre Maguire immediately was like, that's a big save because if that had gone in, I think that would have broken the Bruins' will and their spirit. So you're telling me the Bruins, a team with the first line that has like 100 points already in the playoffs, would have given up if they were down two with 19 minutes to go. And then the next game, game three, he was super effusive in how not give up. Ish, the Bruins were.
So somewhat like,
I'm convinced.
So Cam Neely sea-bassed him in the battles of the arena at some point.
Oh, somebody got to Pierre and was like, "Don't call the Bruins quitters." And then like the guy, the defenseman who screwed up the first goal, who was like, "Oh, look at Bruce Cassidy putting him right back out there, showing no quit." And that defenseman's also not quitting, and the Bruins aren't quitting. I'm like, "What are you doing?"
Someone's overcompensating.
Oh God. But yeah, the Nashville Winnipeg has been fantastic. I've noticed that the Nashville Winnipeg and then also the Vegas San Jose series. Like, you know what's coming back? Pick plays.
Oh.
Where you can run a little screen on a guy and create a little space and get a goal.
And not get called for it.
It's a little Detroit Red Wings hockey is coming back. So I just wish the officiating was better overall.
Don't worry. Those pick plays will be gone by the next lockout. They've changed the rules again. the Winnipeg fans are awesome. It's funny. Like, I feel like there's been a sort of an innovation in NHL marketing in the last couple of years, which is when Nashville's fans and the Nashville scene became as big, arguably the biggest star in the Cup final was Nashville, the city. I feel like now there's this extra emphasis on, we've got to show as much of this Winnipeg fan experience as possible. We got to show you the Vegas experience as much as possible. I feel like they've learned their lesson that you can actually market an experience to casual fans that have not experienced that and make it compelling enough that you'll watch the game.
That's what Buffalo's watching. That's what everyone in Buffalo is watching. They're like, I want to stand outside and watch a playoff game.
What does fun look like?
Right? It's warm enough in May. We could go outside if we want the series. At least they got Rasmus Dahlin. That's good.
Have we talked since the draft lottery?
No, I also remembered there were two things we wanted to talk about last week that we ended up not talking about. It was Mike Francesa coming back and the idea that players don't talk after games.
Dog.
I gotta read an ad on a podcast. Dog, I don't get it.
Boomer on XM Radio this week, his last question to me is like, you know, in Toronto, we don't really understand it. What is Mike Francesa? Like,
wait, Boomer? Oh, I think
Boomer Gordon.
Oh, I think Boomer.
Not Asayson. Yeah. And that was part of it, was trying to explain to a Canadian, like, imagine if, like, Don Cherry and Ron McLean, like, broke up, and Ron McLean went to MLB Network Radio or whatever, and then Don Cherry just had his own show.
Yeah.
And gradually he sort of got lazy and maybe senile and stopped caring.
Started falling asleep.
And then he decided to leave. And then he decided to come back and usurp the people that took over his spot.
After 3 months?
In a Game of Thrones, like, battle against other people on the station.
Like, how much money did they back up onto his lawn on Long Island to get him to come back?
No, that's the thing. I listened to Russo on a podcast with Jimmy Traina, the SI podcast, and Russo said, he's not making as much money as he used to because they gave him the rights to the Mike and the Mad Dog archive. An exchange for salary.
The archive. Why?
I know. Who gives a shit?
Dog, I went back and listened to our show in 94. The Rangers were really good. That, like, what it's is like, it? What is that for?
You know what I would really like to listen to today? What they thought about game 83 of the Yankee season in 2002.
Dog, this Andy Pettit's a good pitcher. He's a competitor. Enormously talented curveball. Like, what? Who's going back for that?
He's going back for that, right?
I feel like he must have just been so bored at home. Like, he just couldn't. I remember, like, Teddy Bruschi for the Patriots had just won a bunch of Super Bowls and was like, I got to go home and spend time with my family. And then, like, a couple months later, like,
I'm back.
You know what? My kids are driving me crazy. I got to get out of the house.
I just need to put on some, you know, an old podcast or some comfort food.
Mikey, they can't bat Cano. Second, he's too valuable to the lineup.
Dog, Soriano's not—he's not a player.
Right.
They gotta go out. They gotta go out and get A-Rod. A-Rod for Soriano's a good deal. What's that? Who wants that?
Oh, the draft lottery. So ultimately, I thought that the NHL's invention of doing it between 7:30 and 8, and then finishing it up later in the night was great. Oh, except they did it in the second intermission instead of the first. If they had done it in the first intermission, it would have been perfect.
It would have been better.
Yeah, I loved it.
But like my argument that I made was like the idea. We live in this era where if you're like 25 or younger, anything you ever want to know or get is at your fingertips,
right?
Like that, right? And like you and I were 40, so like we've lived most of our life in that area, but like we also kind of see the benefit of like, oh yeah, let's draw it out. Ooh, drama. Yeah. But like you said, there's no person on a Saturday night who's 25 or younger who's sitting around watching a hockey game they don't care about to find out that the last three picks, they're just out. They're out somewhere checking their phone to see when it's going to be. That's it.
Maybe. But here's the thing. The NHL has a finite number of compelling reasons for you to watch their product. We're going to put a game outdoors. There's a reason. We got Pittsburgh and Washington. There's a reason. We've got, and now it's like we have this draft lottery. And people care about it. They want to know who gets the top pick.
Yeah.
They're hoping it's not Edmonton. Like, they give a shit about the draft lottery. So now we've got this thing. We don't have to cram it into a half an hour. Like, we can spread it out. And I thought it was an idea that worked. But doing the first fucking, you know, dozen picks, or whatever it was, before the game, and then you got to wait till 10 o'clock on the East Coast to find out the next three was idiotic.
It's so dumb because it ended up being 10 o'clock because I think I forget what went on in that game, but there was like a review or there was something that delayed the game, whatever. Mm-hmm. But why not do the half hour show before game, the Vegas San Jose game, because you can spread it out there. You can do the A block and have it be, oh, here are the particulars, here are this, and then the B block you do the thing with the first 14, and then the C block the final three
teams. Oh, you're saying do the setup before the game, then do the the first lottery and the first intermission?
No, do the lottery show before the show. Do the unveiling between 6:30 or 7:30 and 8, because we got to start the game.
No, I like the idea of having it during the game because I like the idea of keeping people around for the first period. Like, that's great. That's fine. I have no problem with that.
I don't think people are – I think if you're going to watch the game, you're going to watch the game. If you're not going to watch the game, you're just going to find out when you find out.
It builds up some suspense. You know, you get the social media being like, oh, God, I hope it's not Montreal.
Oh, social media was terrible. Social media was like, okay, so percentage-wise, what exactly is it now that we know that, like,
I love it. God. Buffalo, so I'm happy for Buffalo because now they got a little something going on. Like,
do they, though?
Yeah. Eichel, Mittelstad, Dahlin, you can work with that.
Yeah.
You can work with that.
Yeah, but I mean, Eichel's already at the point where he's making a ton of money.
He's making, like, $10 million
Ryan O'Reilly's making too much money for being a 60-point guy who may or may not crash his truck into a Tim Hortons.
It's kind of amazing that we are seeing another Pittsburgh Penguins potential cup run here, and teams are still paying guys more than $8.7 million against the cap.
I know, right?
You know what I mean? Like, can you imagine if Malkin and Crosby had gotten market value? Like, the Penguins would never be doing this. They would have never traded for Kessel if that were the case.
Right.
They couldn't afford it.
Like, I just
it's a very underrated thing, those two guys making the money they make. Because you look at Chicago now and the pickle they're in, and it's partly Taves and Kane earned it, but like it's partially because they took so much damn money against the cap.
They earned it, but it's the salary structure in the NHL is just so bad. You know what I was thinking about the other day? You ever hear of this TV show called Friends?
Yeah, that was the show where the logo included the Infinity Stones. From
exactly,
what I've
got there. What's his name? Gunther just stuck his hand in there, and then he snapped his fingers, and then half the cast disappeared.
I thought it was Ross.
There aren't enough resources in the universe for all these people. But like the way the NHL salary structure works, it's like the show Friends, where the first 2 years nobody on that show made any money because no one knew who those people were. Mm-hmm. And then by seasons 7 through 10, they were all making like $1 million an episode when it was bad. And that's how the NHL salary structure works, where when you're super awesome, you don't get paid as much, and then you get paid too much later when you're bad. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
I hate it. Like, right now we're at a point where, like, you know, Ryan O'Reilly's like Ross in season 9, where you're like, yeah, this is it for you, man. Like, you're not going to do anything after this, so fine. Like, rack up your money, but you shouldn't be getting paid this at this point.
Yeah. Friends season 1. Hey, it's great to meet you. I'm Matthew Perry. I know we're all struggling actors, but it's just great. It's really fun to be part of this cast. Friends season 6.
Could this caviar be any fresher? Has my cocaine delivery man showed up yet? Because I ordered my cocaine 4 hours ago, and I will not do this scene with Courtney until I have my cocaine.
The Golden Knights and the San Jose Sharks, I picked the Sharks to win that series. I feel somewhat more comfortable about it after game 4.
I think I'd still go in 7.
If it goes 7, that's trouble for the Sharkies, because I don't know if they can win a game 7 in Vegas.
Because you just don't go into Vegas and win a game 7. As we've all known for years in hockey.
One does not simply go to Vegas to win a game 7.
That series feels like the one that's the biggest toss-up. Like, I still feel good about Nashville. Mm-hmm. I still feel good about Tampa. Yeah, Washington, Pittsburgh's getting toss-up-ish, I guess. But, yeah.
Vegas, we probably haven't seen each other. That save Fleury made on Couture in overtime.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of the best saves in the last 10 years.
Like, and, like, the arm windmill was like one of the greatest all-time windmills after a glove save I've ever seen. Just
when Orlov hit Murray with that shot in game four last night in Pittsburgh, Washington, and Murray was like doubled over, I'm like, oh man, can you imagine? Yinz, no, we would have won the series of flower. We're still here.
And then he kind of doubled over again later on another shot. Like, I really thought he might be seriously hurt. If Matt Murray doesn't play game five, I would not be surprised. I feel like he might have, I don't know if he practiced or not today, but I remember Marty Biron broke his collarbone in like a warm up for the Rangers. Like, and that was a Dmitry Orlov, like, step into it, take it all at once shot. Casey DeSmith, that's how it ends. I've been trying to figure out how the Caps would blow it if they blow it. Casey DeSmith coming in and winning two of the last three games would probably be the most Caps way to blow it. I'm into that.
See, I thought that the way they blow it is that they discovered that their top line is garbage without Tom Wilson, who got himself suspended for the three games the Penguins then win to win the series. Like, that's the common perception, I think, for Caps fans.
That's like your standard Cap story, but I feel like we're so far along now that you need to kind of have some sort of like epic raising of the bar. Like, leaving, by the way, did Trotz ever say like why he just dug his heels in and didn't like switch up the lines after the first period? Because that line was just getting absolutely torpedoed with Smith Pelly on it.
Nope. They certainly should have. But conversely, like we said before, though, I mean, like the Penguins also kind of figured this shit out as far as not giving up as many odd man rushes. Yet again, we're talking about every other playoff series. We come back to Penguins. It's just how it works.
Yeah. Caps had no speed last night.
I thought, so do you think we're going to see Joe? We might see Joe. Are they playing tonight? I mean, I hope we see Joe Thornton again.
They play, what were the two games last night? I'm pretty sure they play.
Yeah, they play as we do the podcast. Yeah. So I guess people will know if Thornton's back or not. Yeah, but I hope that we see him again.
Thornton skated. Yeah. Thornton skated and be practice. Actually, we can turn this thing out today. We can put this out before the late game starts.
All right, listen. These late games are great.
Boy, what a
But you know what's even better? Getting a good night's sleep.
How does he do it?
Support for today's show comes from Zipa. Now, what is Zipa?
Zipa.
It's Happy Z spelled backwards and is more than a snoring device with a patented tongue strap that's designed to eliminate snoring with two key features. Zipa is an American-made boil and bite mouth guard that is a game changer in the bedroom.
Hey now.
While other snoring devices have only one feature, they either advance the lower jaw or stabilize the tongue, Zipa does both. There are no other snoring solutions like this in the world, not to mention the cost is less than $100, and since Zipa custom molds to your mouth, it's super comfortable. Plus, it's been cleared by the FDA as safe and effective, and if you aren't happy with it, you can return it within 90 days for a full refund. My dad, I wish, had Zipa, because that dude snored to the point where my mom made him sleep in a different room in the house.
Me too. Same exact thing. My dad snored like crazy. Yeah. So like they did the separate beds thing.
So this is what Dave and I are trying to say is that these are the stakes when it comes to snoring.
Mm-hmm.
It is a use the Zipa and get over the snoring, or go fluff up the pillow in the office and sleep there.
Oh, I thought you were saying smother your loved ones.
No. I would never say that. Although, that would also be a cure for snoring.
I mean, that would stop it. Just saying.
So try Zipa and start enjoying Happy Z's every night for your sake and the sake of the people sleeping near you. Just go to Zipa. That's ZYPPAH.com. ZYPPAH.com.
Zipa.
To learn more and use the promo code PUCKSOUP, all one word, for free shipping. That's Zipa, ZYPPAH.com, and promo code PUCKSOUP for free shipping. Zipa, welcome to the PUCKSOUP family, my friends.
Zipa.
All right. Let's talk about hits to the head. You and I both wrote about it.
Let's do it.
Yeah, your column, I guess, was good. Mine was great. What is the thing that you didn't like about my column?
Here's what I didn't like about your
column.
Here
we go.
It felt like you were fence-sitting a little bit.
I am fence-sitting.
Which I don't get at this point in the game. Because
because
of everything we know about head injuries and brain injuries and CTE and stuff. Like, it felt like you were sort of, because we're the same age and you were very beholden to growing up and watching like Messier annihilate Madonna and all that sort of stuff.
I acknowledge that's something that holds me back from wanting to see all contact with the head eliminated because I like hitting in hockey.
Yeah, but like,
but I'm honest about that.
But like, right, which is fine. But like, you can still have hitting if you take away the ability to have questionable hits to the head.
My fence sitting is more
illegal.
My fence sitting is more a function of I don't know mechanically
how you can ban all contact with the head.
You just use the Olympic rule. You use the IHF rule of no... Like, the IHF has those weird caveats.
The IHF has the word direct, yeah, which is as problematic as main.
Yeah, but, like, generally, you know what that means.
And what people...
Like Tom Wilson, like, the Dumoulin hit would be a penalty. But all that stuff would be a penalty. Why is
would
that?
It?
Yeah. That okay. would... Right, the Dumoulin hit would be... And also, like, you seem concerned in your column about how player safety would do supplemental discipline in that world, as if, like, they do it so well,
well
now.
Well, that's... But like, see, that's... We'll get to that in a second. My problem is that I think that it's going to take a generation, if we had a zero-tolerance head-hit policy, for people to be like, why did Zdeno Chara get all these penalties? Like, he's tall and the other guy's short.
Yeah.
And then you're like, but that's just, it's a zero-tolerance policy. You can't have caveats like that. That's my whole point, is that, like, if you're really going to do it, you have to do it. You can't have the height thing. You can't have, well, he was crouching and he was up. You can't have that shit. That's what we have now.
Right.
So you get rid of it all. And I feel like there's going to be a lot of people that are going to see that and be like, this is horseshit. This is not a hit to the head. This is not malicious. It's not anything. He couldn't help but hit the head here.
No, but that's the thing, though, is if you change the rule, because all these hits that happen that are like this are almost always open ice Tom Wilson going into Zach Aston Reese hits. And if you know that there's going to be repercussions if you mess up the tiny little bit that gets him in the head, you're not going to try and throw that hit.
But the Tom Wilson hits are also situations where he tries to throw a full body hit and he just fucks it up.
Right, because he's... by the way, he's really bad at it for a guy who's been doing it for as long as he has.
But like, don't you think that that's going to be a problem? Like, for guys that are trying to hit the right way and they just fuck it up?
Well, then that's the thing. You have to retrain how you hit. Like, if the thing that gets me is the idea, and I believe this is in the IHF rule too, is if a guy has his head down and you hit him in the head, it's okay. Like, that part drives me nuts, because I understand, like, when you're skating with the puck and you have your head down, you make yourself vulnerable, and if you get hit, you get hit. But you can still not hit a guy in the head when his head's down. Like, if your head's down, like, yeah, you close the gap between, like, where his body is and where your head is because you're leaning forward a little bit. But can still not hit a guy in the head when you're doing that.
I think we've gotten to the point where people used to be like, you know, guys who skate with their head down, they just get a free pass over the ice. And I think we got at a point where a lot of people were like, so?
I know, but you don't have to get a free pass. If a guy has his head down, like, you should still take advantage of that and try and dislodge the puck from him. But, like, you don't have to, like, it shouldn't be a free ticket to get away with a hit to the head, is all I'm saying.
The point of my column, as far as being on the fence, is I think a lot of the anger and outrage about these hits to the head are not necessarily about a guy getting a penalty during the game. I think it's about the supplemental discipline part. And even if you ban all contact with the head, you're still not going to fix the fact that these guys don't give out the suspensions that people think are warranted for the actions of the guys hitting heads. And I feel like even if we went zero tolerance, you're still going to have this mechanism that's not going to be satisfactory. So it doesn't fix the main point of outrage, which is, you know, a guy hits another guy in the head and only gets 2 games for it or whatever.
Yeah, but that's incidental to the whole thing. Like,
that's the main problem people have is a situation where Tom Wilson, quote unquote, only gets 3 games for breaking a guy's jaw.
That's a secondary problem. The main problem is there's too many ways out for players to get away with hitting the head. That's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like, player safety is still going to screw up even when you change the rules and say, like, well, we're only going to give him a game because that's what player safety does. But the idea behind changing the rule is that there are fewer instances of just guys getting their brain scrambled because some dude wants to throw a gigantic hit that gets him on SportsCenter RE. Not ER,
right,
of course, because that's never going to be on.
I feel like where it...
Like, you'll still have those hits to the head by accident sometimes, for sure. Like, you're never going to get rid of them completely, but you'll at least have a new world where it won't happen as often.
And my column was basically like, we all have to be cool with this. If you can't kind of get a little bit pregnant when it comes to this zero tolerance thing. Like, we have to treat the hits to the head like we treat high sticks. You know, you don't intend to high stick a guy in the face.
Right.
It just sort of happens. You don't intend to hit a guy in the head. It just sort of happens. So if we're going to see it like that, then maybe this works. And if nothing else, a zero tolerance policy would save player safety some time in trying to do this fucking let's count the pixels between the chin and the shoulder kind of bullshit.
How much did Sami Vatanen's head move? Like,
yeah, I mean, come on,
right?
Like that's a great example.
That
like
makes
that's lickety split, done and done, a penalty and maybe a suspension then.
Right. So right. it makes their lives easier if you mm-hmm. go to the no tolerance. So
the punitive part's still going to be fucked up though, and that's my point. Like for people that think that like taking away all contact with the head is somehow going to fix this other thing that they're mad at, it ain't ever going to fix.
No,
it.
Like nothing's ever going to fix that unless in the next CBA they do something where it like frees them to do whatever they want.
I just I do worry about leaving the game, and I do worry about the size difference of guys, and I do worry about the fact that you're going to have guys that are trying to deliver good hits that just get a little fucked up a little bit, and it's going to be a penalty.
Right, but that's how you make the game safer, is you lessen – there's more risk for a player to kind of look to clean up a guy coming across center ice.
But
you can still do it for sure mm-hmm. as long as you do it right, but then you have to just be more aware of the consequences when you go into it, so there'll be less people doing it as often as they do.
And I do think that at the end of the day, there's two people that really have to be targeted here as far as their ability to affect change. It's the GMs who would be the one to pass a rule like this.
Way too much power, those guys.
And also way too much old school shit going on there.
Yeah.
And it's the players. And the players, by and large, I mean, even in the aftermath of the Tom Wilson hit on both sides of the Caps-Pens rivalry, it was guys being like, we don't want to take physicality out of the game. Like,
You wouldn't.
But they're worried that it will. These are the players talking, not me and you, not keyboard jockeys. These are the players.
A couple of tough guys with a podcast want to tell me how to play a game.
Yeah, a couple of keyboard warriors.
Yeah, fucking. But, like, I don't know. I just – you would still have hit. Again, like the Ovechkin-Crosby hit last night. You would have that hit in every game if you wanted it. You can totally go out and hit a guy in the shoulder up against the boards. But you just – I don't know.
Right.
I don't know.
What say you about zero tolerance hitting good people of Puck Soup podcast listenership? Mikey Likes It writes in.
Mikey likes it.
It needs to go. Penalty every time. Players will adjust. It's time to take something that has an extremely high rate of injury out of the game. I don't think fighting should be affected by this because the players don't throw punches with the same speed and force as a Czech CMMA.
Well,
Mikey likes it,
yeah.
But Mikey needs to understand that if you have a zero tolerance policy
right.
for hits to the head, you sure as shit can't have fighting.
Exactly. Oh, are you going to now defend fighting? Is that going to be your stance?
Oh, I think fighting should totally exist, but I'm saying that if you're going to be consistent about it, you're going to need to get rid of both. But Mikey Likes It is exactly why Ken Dryden doesn't bring up fighting anymore when he starts talking about no excuses every single time.
Right.
Because he knows, oh, and by the way, the thing you really like, you can't have that either. And everybody's like, boo, keep headshots.
That feels like something out of like a Simpsons episode where the mayor gets up in front of the house like, well, I say that we are going to ban headshots.
Yay! Yeah.
But fighting will also leave the game.
Boo!
Headshots for everybody!
Yay!
That is an issue, but yeah. I feel like this is a thing that we'll all be taken care of during the next lockout, but we'll see.
Emma Koch writes in, or Koch, be transparent and consistent. Come up with penalties with the goal of actually eliminating it from the league. Concussions are going to be an ongoing issue for the NFL, and I think hockey needs to deal with this if they want folks to keep playing the sport. I would agree that it's something that can keep you from playing the sport. Beth writes in, for direct head hits with body or equipment, or smashing someone's head into the boards or glass, penalty and a 3-game suspension and a meaningful fine, let's say $50,000. These guys react fast when it comes to passing, shooting, blocking. Surely they can add quickly not killing somebody to that.
I don't know if you can set the minimum at 3 games automatically because every hit will be different when it's a head hit. That's,
yeah.
That does work.
I don't like
where it gets tricky.
I don't like a mandatory minimum for any kind of penalty. I think that's really,
right.
I mean, tricky.
Yeah.
Nathan Mallett writes in, there are obviously bad and the blatant ones should be punished accordingly, but the clean shoulder-to-shoulder hits that end up impacting the head should be addressed separately. What that entails is anyone's guess. So keep the shoulder-to-shoulder with, like, basically keep the thing that happens now is what he's kind of saying.
Yeah, but shoulder-to-shoulder shouldn't entail the head. Like, if you hit a guy in the shoulder and your head snaps, you get a concussion, okay. But, a shoulder-to-shoulder where your shoulder, sorry, there's a dog in the office.
He's being carried around
like he's the king of the office. I just saw that. What were we talking about?
like
the Doughty hit on Carrier. Mm-hmm. Where would that end up being a suspension? That'd be the same sort of 1-game thing in a world where there's no head contact because he's going for the shoulder and gets it a little bit. Like that's to me should be a 1-game suspension in that world.
Single golfer in cart writes in, if the league adopts Ken Dryden's proposal and enforces it beyond preseason in the first month of the season, I'm all for it. But we know how this is going to end. Rinse, wash, repeat. Other sports use video review or can refer an incident for review.
Yeah.
So he doesn't believe that even if they ban headshots, they're going to keep at it.
People in college football hate it. They review the targeting penalties when a guy gets hit in the head. And it's the same thing as reviewing like interference in hockey, where you're not going to get it right every time after you review it. But sometimes they go back, they'll call targeting on the field. They'll go back and look at it and say, actually, it wasn't targeting. And then the guy doesn't get thrown out of the game. That's that's a possibility for hockey. Why people hate reviews so much, man? I don't get it.
Oh, by the way, why aren't we all like completely rallying around the idea of having that high stick review after that bullshit that happened?
I mean,
it's such an easy thing. Like, right. If you think a guy's own stick cut him or his teammate's stick cut him, buddy, you should be able to review it. It's such I don't understand why it doesn't exist.
Buddy, you are preaching to the high stick choir. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. And that again, that's one that will take 2 seconds. You need one angle to see the guy's own stick hitting him in the face. They got a 4-minute power play out of that. A 4-minute major for hitting yourself in the face.
I can imagine. It's like you're in the GM's meeting. You're like, hey, I've got this really relevant and easily fixed thing to put before all of you. And Colin Campbell's like, but what if he takes his own stick and hits himself in the head with it, bleeding like an old school wrestler?
Coaches are teaching him to take sticks in the face.
Good callback.
What?
I love it. Matt D., these nuts. If legal hits are leaving people on the ice motionless and unable to stand, there's a problem with the law. The game will also only get faster and more skilled by getting rid of those types of hits and players. Yeah. That is, if refs are brave enough to make the calls.
Yeah. Like Tom Wilson, I wonder, because again, I understand that Tom Wilson drives possession and all that sort of stuff.
He's a good player.
He's a 35-point guy.
He's a good player.
And he's totally preoccupied with murder whenever he's on the ice. So, like, imagine you send Tom Wilson out there where he's no longer preoccupied with murder. Maybe he's a 50-point guy. Maybe he's more pleasing to the eye to watch. Mm-hmm. It would make the game so much better.
Finally, Joe Sobek writes in, zero tolerance policies never work. They always have unintended consequences for the cases on the margins that result in totally unjust results that no reasonable person would have intended. Mm-hmm. I feel like that is ultimately the big problem, the big issue here that I tried to kind of address in the column today, which is that we all have to be all in on it. And we can't be like, except for this case. And I think that's a real issue for people because I don't think they want to be all in on it.
Well, they should be.
All right. Okay. So that was the question of the week.
All right,
and we gave you a lot of hockey talk and a lot of other stuff.
We got to set our watches.
And so right now, for the next what?
I want to say it's 3:30 on my phone right now. You want to do, because we got to do the mailbag after
8
this.
Minutes.
Eight? Oh, we got to do more than eight.
For the
Infinity War talk? Shit.
For those of you who don't want to listen to Infinity War, that's why we left it at the end of the show. You can stop now.
Okay.
But if you want to listen to Infinity War with spoilers, you can keep listening.
Well, people here have jobs and they don't want to. Yeah. A 65-minute segment about the Infinity War.
Did you see Infinity War?
No.
Are you going to see it?
Oh.
All right. Okay. All right, we're fine. Clear. Jesus Christ.
That's actually a great question because that would have been terrible.
Remember that? he's like a prisoner over here. All right. Listen. All right. For those of you who are ducking out now. We love you. Thanks for listening. I'm Greg Wyshynski, ESPN. He's Dave Loza. And thank you so much. Details of our Dallas Live show coming soon. And thanks for listening and review iTunes, blah, blah, blah. For those of you that are still listening, 3, 2, 1, spoiler space over, Infinity War, go.
Gamora is a fucking idiot. I can't believe how dumb she is. She at no point in any of the Guardians of the Galaxy movies shows any signs of being as stupid as she ends up being in Infinity War, and it makes me mad.
Because she believed that Thanos wouldn't kill her?
So
her whole thing was that she didn't think that he loved her. And so she couldn't be the one that he was going
to
kill.
Let's go back to the scene where she tells Peter to kill her if she gets caught.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, I'm willing to die with this secret because if I tell him, the world will end. The universe will end. Everything involving the Soul Stone was fucking annoying. So she's like, kill me. And he's like, oh, I'll kill you. And he tries to kill her and he can't. They go back to Titan.
Bubbles come out.
Bubbles come out of the gun. There's a lot of bubbles in the movie. So she's willing to die to protect this secret. Yet now she's not willing to die when she sees her robot sister being tortured and she instantly gives up the location of the Soul Stone as opposed to killing herself, stabbing herself, whatever she was going to do, she doesn't do it.
It's a reoccurring theme in the movie about people sacrificing themselves to help others.
Happens a lot.
Yeah.
So they go to the place where the Soul Stone is, where somehow fucking Agent Smith is there. I don't know.
By the way, that wasn't Hugo Weaving. That was somebody else playing.
Oh, was it?
Hugo Weaving said he would never wear that prosthetic again, and he was serious about it, apparently. And,
no kidding.
And it's another person playing the Red. I was so happy to see the Red Skull, by the way.
Oh, good for him.
I was like, that's so perfect.
I can't remember how he died in the Captain America movie.
He got sucked into the Tesseract.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah.
And it spit him out in the place where the Soul Stone was.
Where the Soul Stone was, which is great.
So they get to the Soulstone place, and I read this on the Ringer and made me think of this too. Like somehow they don't materialize at the top of the mountain. They walk up the mountain after they
Yeah, that's kind of a weird thing too.
But that's fine.
I figure that's like electromagnetic activity. They can't they can't go there or something.
The Soulstone has like a force field, which we'll get to that later too. So they get up to the top of the mountain, and for some reason, I'm also confused as to why Thanos doesn't have any sort of idea of like what the Soul Stone is or how to. His whole life is the Infinity Stones, and he doesn't seem to have anything.
It's kind of weird that he knows that he can snap his fingers and kill half the universe, but he's not sure about all this other shit.
Right. But okay, fine, whatever. They get to the top of
the
mountain.
Maybe he read the Cliff's Notes on the Infinity Gauntlet.
He just skimmed the Soul Stone part. Yeah. He was like, love, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So then,
Hatu, Barada.
The not Agent Smith, Red Skull guy, explains what he has to do to get the Soul Stone, which is to kill something he loves.
Right.
And everyone in the theater instantly knows what's going to happen, but Gamora doesn't.
Red Skull's like, it's a quick question. Did we win the war? Or have you been to Germany recently? Just out of curiosity.
How did that one go?
So, Hail Hydra mean anything to you, or
like the Gamora's lack of situational awareness in that scene, where she not only does the guy go, you have to throw something down there you love and kill it. Everyone in the theater knows what's going to happen. Gamora doesn't, and she takes a victory lap. She's like, "LOL, you don't love anything, ha 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 ha, you lose." And I'm like, how are you not running instantly the moment you find out what he has to do?
Because she was convinced that he doesn't love anything.
I was so fucking annoyed by everything up until that moment. Like I still wasn't happy she died, but I was just like, what the fuck? How does she not know?
Her death pales in comparison to my biggest problem in the movie, which I really liked, by the way.
Oh yeah, by the way, go see it.
Yeah, it's a great flick. Yeah. Which was the Peter Quill scene, where he finds out that Gamora dies.
That's my Evgeny Malkin comparison.
And it is such a fucking horrible, like, that's the on the nose, you know exactly where this is going scene.
Yeah.
Where, like, first of all, that entire sequence where the heroes that are on Titan are fighting Thanos is like that shit that everybody said about the airport fight in Civil War, like, oh my god, it's the perfect encapsulation of a comic book. I'm like, no, this is it. Mm-hmm. They're all using their different powers and all their little smarts, and they're all working together.
Right.
They're all taking on the, like, it's the fucking best.
Right.
And then it ends with fucking Peter Quill doing something just really, it's just it's stupid. It's just stupid and out of character. Like, I know, we all know he's a hothead, but by no means is he gonna, like, just, it's so, and no, none of them are just like, shoot him in the fucking leg so he doesn't do this.
Right.
It's just so dumb. And then, of course, like, you know, it has to happen to move the plot forward and have them not defeat him at that point.
Right. That's why he's like, he was like Malkin in 2010, where you all you had to do is slightly get under his skin and he destroyed everything for the team. Yeah. He was a completely selfish, he took a selfish penalty there. They had everything all worked out. They were about to win. And he was just like, nope, I'm gonna take this guy on one-on-one. Like,
yeah.
God. And also, I don't think Chris Pratt has the emotional range to do that scene. That's my whole point about the Chris rankings.
Guardians 3 is going to be like, no Gamora, and he almost cost everybody in the universe their lives. And it's going to just, I hope his mom made a mixtape of Joy Division songs, because it's just going to be that.
That's the other thing, too. Like do you, because I don't think this. I think Loki's dead, and I think that's it. I think
Loki's dead. I think Gamora's not dead because we saw her younger version in that weird. By the way, I thought that was interesting, and it was really left open whether or not Thanos died. Because he goes to that place where he meets young Gamora
again.
I didn't
think about that. Right, because 50%. That's the thing, too, about the Soul Stone. 50% of the world's going to die. You've already put Gamora in a 50-50 chance she's going to die, and now you're like sad she's definitely going to die?
And then he ends up in that idyllic place. Which, by the way, had my favorite Easter egg in the entire movie. So the Infinity Gauntlet comic series ends with Nebula steals the gauntlet from Thanos, and then they have to basically defeat Nebula. And I don't know if they'll go that direction, but it ends with them visiting Thanos on his farm. And part of his farm was...
Who's them?
Some of the characters at the end of it. It's like complicated. Don't worry about it.
Like the good guys? Or the
good guys, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And so... Part of his farm was he hung his armor on a scarecrow at his farm, and they had that in the movie. And I was like, that's really fucking cool that they did that callback. But he talks to young Gamora and ends up on an idyllic farm on Titan, which, by the way, last time we saw it was giant shit pile. So it makes me think that maybe he died. Like he snapped his fingers and killed himself.
Huh.
But we'll see if that's the case.
But then what would the second half of the movie be? Like, what would the next movie be?
Well, I think that everybody who died is in the Soul Stone. They're not dead.
Right. Like, my theory, first of all, you know they're not dead because they're not killing Black Panther.
But hold on.
While Black Panther's still in the theaters making $1 billion.
I've heard people say that and, like, saying, that really takes the sting out of the ending. I disagree, man. Like,
no.
I put myself in that movie and thought about what these characters are thinking as these people disappear. And if you didn't feel something to that fucking Spider-Man, fucking Tony Stark moment.
Yeah, also, it seemed weird how Spider-Man took longer to disappear than everybody
now,
else.
Now, there's a reason for that.
So he could get off.
No, he has Spidey sense. He knew something was amiss. So even before he started floating to the wind, He could sense something was wrong. He said, "Mr. Stark, I don't feel so good." And I started crying.
And then became the greatest meme in the history of Twitter.
I think everybody, I think all the people that disappeared, they're inside the Soul Stone.
They're somewhere. They're all coming back. Like Gamora, again, they're making more Guardians of the Galaxy movies. So you know Gamora is coming back.
She might not. Maybe Zoe Saldana's like, "I'm tired of painting my fucking skin different colors for these goddamn movies."
That is true.
Yeah.
What other takes you have? I still have a few more takes.
Go ahead.
So, there's a point in the movie where they realize, hey, Vision's got a soul stone in his head.
Mm-hmm.
Or not a soul stone, an infinity stone in his head. What was his stone again?
He had the
yeah, I forgot.
All right, time was
Doctor Strange.
Was Strange.
The yellow one, whatever yellow. It was.
He had the yellow stone in his head.
Somebody was like,
he had the lemon stone.
Yeah,
the lemon flavored.
He had the lemon lime.
The lemon flavored
Gatorade stone,
lifesaver stone in his head.
He had the really good chuckle in his head. And whoever it was like, here's an idea. Let's destroy it. We can destroy the stone.
Yeah.
And Captain America's like, no, we don't trade a life for a life.
Yeah, right.
This is my Westworld problem. He's not a life. He's a robot. He's Scarlet Witch's sex robot.
Being.
He's a sex robot.
He is alive.
For the lady who can't do an accent.
But also, I love that part because they called back to Captain America. They're like, wait, didn't you kill yourself?
Yeah.
You try to save the world?
It's like, well, that was different. Was it? Because you're not a sex robot for some... where's she from again? Cracovia? Whatever.
Well, that's just it. My favorite thing of the entire Infinity War movie was the first time we see Elizabeth fucking Olsen on screen. They're in Scotland. They're living there. Her and Paul Bettany, Vision, they're kind of just trying to make a home for themselves. And he's like, oh, it's such a beautiful day here in Scotland. And you're expecting to hear, yes, it is. I am Cracovia. But they just got rid of the accent.
No, but it came back again later. There's scenes where like it pops back. I don't understand. I need someone to ask who's the Brusso brothers or whoever
Brusso
makes
brothers,
the, whoever
yeah.
does the stuff.
Yeah.
Like it's like Ross on Friends where they're phasing out the accent, but it comes back a little bit and then it goes away.
Like her first scene, it's like, oh, I love being here in Scotland.
Yeah.
And then later in the movie, she's like, we must destroy the stone.
My wife, she got a soul stone in her head. I like a dude with a sex robot with a stone in his head.
Yeah. What did you think of Thanos? Because I thought that they fucking nailed it. I it's different than the comic. Comic, he is the Mad Titan. Like, he is. I think we talked about this on the show before, and you couldn't believe that it was the case. But in the comic, he kills half the universe to impress the female embodiment of death
because
he wants to fuck death.
He wants to fuck death.
Yes.
Also, I thought about this too the other day. Who do you think has had sex more recently, Captain America or Thanos? Because I think it's a really difficult question. Because Thanos is a workaholic. His entire species was wiped out. And he's gigantic. And obviously, if Peter Quill and Gamora can get together, like, cross-species things can happen. But, like, he needs to find someone that can take him, essentially.
I guess the question is, are there any old copies of National Geographic hanging around Captain America's house? Because, I mean, it has to be era-appropriate porn for him. He can't use new porn.
No, I'm talking about fucking, like actual sexual intercourse.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, if he's able to masturbate, he's obviously not going to be looking for any Strange. And by that, I mean Doctor Strange.
So that was actually a really good line in the movie. I'm Doctor Strange. Oh, we're using our superhero names. I'm Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I do you think Captain America has had sex yet since ever?
No.
You don't think so?
No, he's got a lot on his mind. Also, Thanos definitely fucks. Also, I would like the idea of making him sympathetic, but also, like, to me, it's like the Doc Ock villain. You know, when they did Doc Ock, it's like he was driven mad by this desire to create this energy source, and his intentions are somewhat noble, but he's a maniac now. And in Thanos' case, it's like, I had this dogma, this philosophy, and I'm gonna go and take it to the extremes, you know?
But also, his plan... Basically, like he's a dude who wants to do his job more efficiently because he could just keep going planet to planet and killing 50% of people, right?
This is the way to do it real quick.
Right.
Yeah.
But also, if you snap your fingers,
mm-hmm.
there might be some planets where like 70% of people live, because like there's no guarantee that like the people who disappear are going to be 50-50 on every planet. So he's kind of getting away from his plan by being lazy about it.
Imagine
with his fingers
if he snaps his fingers and it affects the planet that Anne Hathaway, Matthew McConaughey, and Matt Damon are on in Interstellar.
Matt Damon's in that movie too?
Oh, spoiler.
I don't care. It's been 5 years. I haven't seen it. You can spoil it.
So, yeah.
But that part was confusing, too. But I had not considered the possibility that Thanos died.
Yeah. I think they all come back. I think... But I do think that we're going to... I've seen some photos from the set of Avengers... Of Four Avengers.
Four Avengers.
And I think we're going to have some timeline shenanigans, which makes me very excited.
Oh, the timeline shenanigans.
I love it.
Let me see if I have any other... The Wakanda force field... What kind of a bullshit force field was that?
Oh, it's
you can just crawl through it.
Yeah, well, you know, it's the same force field apparently that the Gungans had in Phantom Menace.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Remember where the battle droids are coming and they put the giant force field up and the Gungans are inside the force field, but the battle droids can just like walk through it. It was the same principle. Like their guns couldn't shoot through it, but the battle droids could walk through
it. Yeah, and you can go under it. Apparently, you can go under it.
By the way, the best line in the movie is when what's her face from the. The little fighting force there for Wakanda. They're talking about, like, I didn't think that when you said that we'd invite people to Wakanda that it would be like this or something like that. He's like, well, what'd you think it was going to be? She's like, I thought that we'd get the Olympics.
The Olympics or a Starbucks. Yeah, there's a lot of funny lines in the movie.
Yeah, it's a funny movie.
What else? Was any more in Thanos Vision? You know, Elizabeth Olsen can't do an accent. Oh, the Mark Ruffalo CGI? Like, when he's inside the Iron Hulkbuster Man?
Suit. Like, so what? Fucking horrible.
What was that?
Yeah. I like the idea of Hulk being, like, scared to come out because he got his ass beat by Thanos. Like, that's totally in keeping with, like, Hulk being his immature id.
Yeah.
Like, I love that.
It's totally fine with that.
There's a lot of... And there's a lot of, like... I know people had problem with the movie because it's basically, like... It's like The Matrix Reloaded. Like, it's a setup for the next thing, you know?
I didn't really mind. I thought I would be annoyed by that, but I wasn't. But I get it.
Neither was I. And I think the cool thing is that the setup goes beyond who disappeared at the end. The setup is also like, we haven't resolved Cap and Iron Man. We haven't resolved this Hulk thing. Like, we don't know where the fuck Hawkeye or Ant-Man or Valkyrie are. Like, all this stuff is sort of just floating out there as far as like, and then, you know, you have the Captain Marvel thing too that's going to happen. So it's cool. I think there's like, I'm super stoked. You go back to what we were talking about earlier in the show about like the need of millennials to have instant gratification.
Right.
I really wanted the next movie to start.
Oh, for sure.
I was staying in the theater.
Also, there were no kids in my theater, but like I kept hearing stories about how kids were crying at the end of it. Like I don't know what the movie was rated because I'm an adult, so I don't check that.
It's pretty brutal for a kid.
Yeah, like that seems like a heavy sort of like.
Someone pointed out that like if you're like a 12-year-old. Like, all you know are these movies.
Yeah, like, it's like...
You've grown up with these movies. You've like, grown up with fucking, you know, it's Spider-Man
like
and
it's
shit.
It's like being a Boston fan and you're 12 years old and all you know is championships every year, and then 1 year, suddenly you don't win any championships.
Or a 2-year-old Pittsburgh fan. All
right. Oh, you know, the other thing, too, is Carrie Coon in the movie.
Yeah.
They Tarkin'd her. They basically just made her an entire CGI thing, which I don't get either because...
The one member of the Black Order that was my favorite was the guy who got sucked out of the spaceship. The guy who's like, all of you should be so honored to have your lives ended by Thanos.
That was kind of how they sold the whole bad guy thing, was that Thanos wasn't crazy. It's a religion.
He's like the Flavor Flav of Thanos. He's just like their hype man.
Yeah, he's like, ladies and gentlemen, coming to the stage.
He's like, yeah, boy, bass, how low can you go? Death row, what a brother knows. All right, I'm going to go. Listen to the mailbag on the Patreon. Thank you all for subscribing there. That was your spoilerific review. Two thumbs up. I thought you were going to hate it, but two thumbs up from your Puck Soup boys.
Where would you rank it in the Marvel Universe?
Oh,
rankings?
God, come on. We don't have time for that.
Because in general, I would put it...
Of the Avengers movies.
No.
Avengers.
Oh, you're saying...
Avengers first, Civil War second... This
Civil War is not an Avengers movie.
It is.
It's a Captain America.
It's an Avengers movie. Come on, let's be honest. I would say this Civil War. I'm sorry, Avengers Civil War. This and then Ultron. I think I like maybe
Ultron's last for sure.
I like that. I don't know. I feel like Civil War was more cohesive outside. I mean, this had a much better ending. I'll tell you that.
There was a better plan as opposed to Daniel Brühl's plan.
Thanos has cell phone footage of all of you. I got you all in Wakanda to show you all about people murdering each other.
That was the thing, too. It's also kind of a letdown because Ragnarok and Black Panther were so good
Yeah.
that you were like I read a review where they said like it was more about just getting everyone in the movie, and they get everyone in the movie except for like Hawkeye and Ant-Man, like you said, but oh, it doesn't feel forced.
There's one last thing we have to talk about.
Oh,
ring ring.
Hello, Peter Dinklage.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Peter, Russo Brothers here. We'd love for you to be in our film.
Who did you have me in mind to play?
We were going to have you play a dwarf.
A really tall dwarf.
Yeah.
Sold.
Right. I think it was Vince Mancini wrote about how in what's the guy's name? The guy who did In Bruges and the show.
Oh, Martin McDonagh.
Yeah, like Martin McDonagh seems like he just puts dwarves in movies to make fun of dwarves. Right. That's like his thing. And like this was like the opposite of it. Where
this is
it
dwarf
was like,
empowerment.
Yes, yeah. exactly what I thought. I also thought too at the end of the movie when everyone disappeared, I was like, oh, it's like The Leftovers. Yeah. And then Carrie Coon was in it. And I was there like, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, Carrie Coon.
All right. That's the show. Thank you so much, everybody. We love you. And we'll talk to you next week. Bye.
Bye. See ya.
Do-do-do-do.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to what if you commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hoggy and nonsense. Part 2.